Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming on this day that ended up being hot instead of raining. The town clerk informs me that we have a quorum. I hereby call this annual town meeting to order. My name is Kate Blake. It is an honor and a privilege to serve as your moderator for this 2021 annual town meeting. Please allow me to introduce you to two members of the LS singing group, Accent A Cappella, Alyssa Phillips and Fiona Morris, who will lead us in the singing of the national anthem, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. Fiona has been singing since the fourth grade and not only uses her voice for singing, but is also a well-known advocate among the LS community. She is wise beyond her years and the type of person who volunteers and entertains wherever she goes. Her empathetic nature and hardworking attitude is empowering to all. Fiona is truly an asset to the LS community with a voice like no other. Fiona is headed to Worcester Polytech in the fall. Alyssa is an incredibly bright and intellectually curious young woman and an artist. She not only sings, she also has an online store where she sells her own artwork. She's an avid world traveler, and her next journey will be to Boston University to study classical studies and ancient civilizations. I now invite you to rise, if you are able, for the singing of the national anthem, followed by the Pledge of Allegiance. Alyssa and Fiona. Thank you, Alyssa and Fiona. For the record, I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of timely filing of the warrants to residents. I can also report to the hall that the certified free cash, according to Christine Nyhan, town accountant, is $4,249,754. Technically, the moderator is required to read each article and all of the related procedural documents to the hall verbatim. As you may know, Sudbury has adopted the practice of omitting the reading of the warrant by the moderator with the consent of the hall. Therefore, may I have a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of the annual town meeting, the officer's return of service notice, and the individual articles of the warrant? Second. This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. Anybody opposed? That passes unanimously. To assist me with managing this outdoor town meeting, I have asked Nell Forkas to serve as assistant moderator. May I have a motion approving the appointment of Nell Forkus as Assistant Town Moderator for the 2021 Annual Town Meeting. Is there a second? This requires a majority to pass. All in favor, please signify by raising your cards. Anyone opposed? That passes by unanimous. I would like to express my deepest gratitude to the dedicated town officials and staff who have kept our town running during these challenging times. In particular, I would like to acknowledge their flexibility and resiliency in planning and execution of this outdoor town meeting. It took countless hours and logistics to pull it off. I'm going to read through the names fairly quickly so that we can get this done as soon as we can. Town Clerk Beth Klein and Assistant Town Clerk Rose Miranda, Town Council Jonathan Silverstein, Town Manager Henry Hayes, Select Board Jeannie Drettler, Chair, Jennifer Roberts, Vice Chair, Dan Carty, Charlie Russo, Bill Schneller. On the Finance Committee, we have Eric Polk, Co-Chair, Scott Smigler, Co-Chair, Susan Berry, Ronald Brumback, Blair Keppel, Howard Feng, Michael Joachim, Jean Nam, and Sony Parenti. Members of town staff include Mark Thompson, Technology Administrator, Patty Golden, Senior Administrative Assistant to the Town Manager, Marianne Bilodeau, Assistant Town Manager and HR Director, Dennis Cohane, Finance Director, Cynthia Jerry, Director of Assessing, Elaine Jones, Legal Assistant, Layla Frank, Information Officer, Adam Duquesne, Director of Planning and Community Development, Beth Sudemeyer, Environmental Planner, Dennis Mimone, Park, Recreation and Aquatic Director, Esme Green, Goodnow Library Director, Bill Barletta, Combined Facilities Director, Andrew Lewis, Inspector of Buildings, Bill Murphy, Health Director, Lori Capone, Conservation Coordinator, Anna Oliveira, Acting Council on Aging Director, Dan Nason, DPW Director. In Public Safety, we have Fire Chief John Whalen and Police Chief Scott Nix, as well as various police officers are here today. For the schools, we have Brad Crozier, SPS Superintendent, and Bella Wong, LSRHS Superintendent. I also want to thank today Boy Scout Troop 63. Thank you for your assistance with addressing the microphones as well as collecting for the Sudbury Food Pantry. The scouts with us today are Teddy Shee, Sam Varner, Shane Hauptman, Sammy Hauptman, Nico Barrera, Mario Dishneka, Zach Jones, Casey Tupta, Dimitri Velotousis, Jack Clark, Tessu Ham, and Gregory Cremel. And parents assisting them are Dee Tupta and Irma Dishninka. I also want to thank the Sudbury Girl Scouts who are selling refreshments to support the Gold, Silver, and Bronze Award projects, which provide solutions to problems impacting our local community. In addition, they have information at their table about Hope Sudbury's Dash for Hope fundraiser to support neighbors in need. From Girl Scout Troop 62882, we have Ella Varner, Kate Varner, Mia Coffin, and Taylor Altiero, and their parent with them is Maureen Altiero. From Girl Scout Troop 62503, we have Scouts Anya Kuster and Taylor Gardner, and their parents are Stephanie Custer and Christine Gardner. From Girl Scout Troops 65254 and 892545, we have Scouts Elizabeth Hooting and Charlotte Hooting, and their parent Shirley Hooting. Finally, I'd like to thank Lynn Pororo of Sudbury TV, who was indispensable in the execution and planning of this event. Many thanks also to her crew, who has been here for many hours helping set up, Cliff McGann, Terry Lockhart, and Matt Cranson. And we also have members of the LS TV Club, Damon Martin, Ethan Perillo, and Skylar Wernick. I have two quick announcements. I do want everybody to be mindful as they make their way to the restrooms that there are wires for the AV that is being marked by the cone, so please be mindful of that. And then if anybody wants to order from Giuliana's Catering, you can go to the town website, at the town meeting page on the town's website, and you can order there mobily. And the Girl Scouts and Boy Scouts can even bring that to your chair if you enter in your information about where you are located. I now recognize Select Board Chair Jamie Drettler for a resolution in memory of those citizens who have served the town and passed away during the preceding year.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Whereas the town of Sudbury has enjoyed the blessing of those in the community who have gave their time and talent to enrich the quality of life in our town. And whereas this past year has seen several of its citizens and employees who have rendered public service and civic duty pass from among us. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the town of Sudbury extend its heartfelt sympathy to the families of these persons and recognize their service and dedication to the community. Adolph Balco, Gary M.C. Bean, Joyce A. Boardman, Robert K. Coe, Maria A. Davis, Nelson H. Golden, Edward J. Gottman, Thomas E. Joyce, Jr., Geraldine Lavelle, Douglas R. Lewis, Jr., Donald Lipsky, Jeanette I. Marr, Ellen L. Morgan, Alan Mosher, Robert A. Nation, John T. Nixon, Jr., Lydia M. Pastusik, Carol J. Reynolds, Roy T. Sanford, Margaret Ann Sifferlin, Nancy J. Summers, Barbary Van Bailey, Robert Wenham. Thank you.
I'd now like to recognize Senator Jamie Eldridge for a citation.
So good afternoon, and thank you so much for inviting me to this Sudbury Town Meeting. I will say I didn't realize it would be this hot out wearing a full suit. I'm here to present a citation to just an outstanding elected official here in Sudbury. So I'd like to ask Lisa Kujachian to come and stand with me. Lisa? So I'm extremely proud to represent the town of Sudbury, and when I tell colleagues, other constituents that I represent the town of Sudbury, inevitably the first comment that comes back is the great quality public schools here in Sudbury and Lincoln Sudbury. And that doesn't just happen on its own. It takes dedicated local officials advocating for increased state investments to make sure teachers, kids have the support to make sure that we have an excellent learning environment. And myself and Representative Carmine Gentile, I know who's here as a Sudbury resident, and Senator Mike Barrett, were just recently before the Lincoln and Lincoln Sudbury School Committee meetings, and Lisa was a tremendous advocating for policies and more investment in the schools. And so, Lisa, I have here a citation for you. I want to thank you for your tremendous service on the Sudbury School Committee. And the citation reads, be it hereby known that the Massachusetts Senate hereby extends its congratulations to Lisa Kujachian in recognition of your dedicated service as a member of the Sudbury School Committee. And be it further known that the Massachusetts Senate extends its best wishes for continued success. And this is signed by Senate President Karen Spilka and one of your state senators, Jamie Eldridge, as well as State Senator Michael Barrett. So, Lisa, thank you so much for your service. It's been an honor to serve with you, and best wishes. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa, for your many years of service. Article 1, HEAR reports. For many years, it has been our tradition at annual town meeting to honor someone who has performed valuable service to the town by asking him or her to make a motion under Article 1 of the warrant. This year, we honor Deb Kruskal, formal design review board member of 27 years. Sudbury was fortunate to have Ms. Kruskal's landscape expertise and involvement with many site plan design and sign review projects during her many years of service. Ms. Kruskal, would you please come forward to the podium in front?
Move to accept the reports of the town boards, commissions, officers, and committees as printed in the 2020 town report or as otherwise presented, subject to the correction of errors, if any, where found.
Is there a second? The Select Board for a report? No.
Select Board supports.
Okay. Is there any discussion? This requires a majority vote. All in favor, please raise your cards. Anyone opposed? That passes by unanimously. Thank you again for your service to Sudbury, Ms. Kruskal. Before we begin consideration of the substantive articles of the warrant, I'd like to take a moment to review some basic procedural issues. For more detail, please refer to your warrant starting on page Roman numeral 1. Every matter that is voted on at town meeting must come in the form of a motion. The warrant articles themselves are not self-starting, but a motion may be made to move in the words of the article. Unless a presenter moves in the words of the article exactly as it is printed in the warrant, he or she must explain to the meeting the changes in the motion. All motions to amend must be delivered to me, the town clerk, and to Mr. Thompson, the technology administrator, in writing before they are made. If you wish to speak, please make your way to one of the standing microphones in the center aisle and wait to be recognized. You may line up at the microphone, just remember to remain 6 feet apart. When you get to the microphone, you can take your mask off to speak. If there is anybody who, due to mobility issues, cannot get to one of the microphones, please raise your card, and I will have one of the Boy Scouts bring the microphone on a boom to you. Only registered voters of Sudbury, non-resident Sudbury employees, or elected state officials may speak without permission in the meeting. Every time you address the meeting, you must begin by slowly and clearly stating your name and address. All remarks and questions should be addressed to me, and then if appropriate, I will recognize town staff or officials to answer your question accordingly. According to our bylaws, presenters of articles may speak for a maximum of 10 minutes and all other speakers for a maximum of 5 minutes, unless additional time is granted by the meeting. Many presenters have pre-recorded their presentations and will be giving brief summaries today instead. Hopefully you have had a chance to review the pre-recorded presentations before coming here today, as we will not be showing them. I have asked Layla Frank to monitor the timing of those speaking today. Some notes on voting. I will remind you of the requisite quantum before each vote, and then ask all present to signify their votes in favor or against the motion by raising their cards. I will then count the vote and announce the result. If the vote is too close for me to call, I will call for a counted vote. Given the substantial amount of time it takes to do a count in this manner, I ask that you not request such a procedure unless you are certain that I miscalculated a vote. I assure you that unless the show of hands is obvious, I will call for a counted vote myself. Around the four-hour mark today, depending upon where we are with the articles, I plan to take a brief 20-minute break and hope to conclude all of our business no later than 6:30. Lastly, a brief word about decorum. A healthy respect for both sides of an article is essential if we are to achieve our goal of acting in the best interests of our town. I ask that you treat every speaker today with courtesy and respect, no matter how strongly you may disagree. To that end, I will not allow any clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noise at any point during the meeting. It is within my powers as moderator to terminate the right to speak of anyone who makes disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, or town official. I would also ask that everyone keep their remarks as brief as possible today so that we can get through the business of this meeting by the end of the day. At this time, I now recognize the chair of the Select Board, Janie Drettler, for a State of the Town address. Please note that for this address, as well as the Finance Committee's State of the Budget presentation, which will be addressed in Article 3, there is no set time limit. Thank you. Ms. Drettler?
Thank you very much. Hello, my name is Janie Drettler, and I am the chair of the Sudbury Select Board. I am pleased to welcome you to the 2021 annual town meeting. It has only been 8 months since we came together for Sudbury's 2020 annual town meeting, which was delayed from the prior May due to the pandemic. We found ourselves in the historic position of holding our first fully outdoor town meeting in recent memory. We are fortunate to have a beautiful, although hot, day again, and I hope that we have a successful town meeting again today. A huge thank you to town staff, resident volunteers, and Sudbury TV for their tremendous efforts so that we can come together to safely continue this important work. And due to the COVID-19 pandemic, we are operating in this last year in a state of emergency. With the rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine, there is some light at the end of the pandemic tunnel. This past year has been incredibly difficult, and the losses have been great. My hope for all of us going forward is that we find happiness in the small things, take comfort in those we love, find something to be passionate about, and look forward to a brighter future. Congratulations to Henry Hayes on his one-year anniversary on April 1st as town manager. We truly appreciate your leadership and efforts to ensure that the town continues to operate successfully for our residents. Thank you, Henry. The 2020 Employee of the Year is Officer Alan Hutchinson. We wish Officer Hutch, as he is known to all Sudbury school children and their parents, well in his retirement and thank him for his many years of service. The 2020 Supervisor of the Year is Bill Murphy, Sudbury's Health Director. Under Bill's leadership, Sudbury has benefited from the health department's efforts to minimize the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic by counseling individuals and connecting citizens with vital resources. Thank you, Bill. Thanks to all town employees for their work providing necessary services to residents and all individuals who have offered to serve on Sudbury's many volunteer groups, boards, committees, and commissions. Thank you to Bella Wong and Brad Crozier, our school superintendents, to our principals, our teachers, and staff for putting the education and well-being of our students first by providing a hybrid and remote model and now the work they have done to reopen the schools full time. Thank you. We also appreciate our local businesses. I cannot name them all, but I will call attention to the Sudbury Chamber of Commerce for their many events, which are designed to strengthen our local economy during this very difficult time. On November 3rd, in the presidential election, just over 89% of Sudbury's registered voters made their voice heard. In comparison, we recently held our annual town election, representing just over 16% of town registered voters. That's 1/6. Democracy works best when the people's voices are heard, and who you elect matters when it comes to deciding how tax dollars are allocated and determining which infrastructure improvements to make. Thank you to Beth Klein, town clerk, and her hardworking staff and election volunteers for providing mail-in and early voting opportunities. Town meeting is where we review and approve proposals that have been vetted by our finance committee, school committees, the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee, and the Community Preservation Committee, as well as the Select Board. These volunteers and their vital supporting staff meet over many meetings and months to determine how to balance various competing financial and capital needs to maintain and improve our town. Here are a few of our recent accomplishments. It was at the 2020 town meeting that the residents of Sudbury looked to the future and voted to approve the design and build of a new community center and the acquisition of the former CSX rail corridor, enabling possible future expansion of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. Both initiatives passed at the November ballot, strengthening our commitment to being a place for all to live, work, and play. Sudbury voters also continued their efforts to protect our environment by committing to reducing the use of plastic with 2 bylaw changes. And despite the pandemic, the Department of Public Works continued their work to improve town infrastructure. Also, our wonderful Park and Recreation Department also continued to offer swim lessons and other terrific programming for town residents. In November, the Senior Center partnered with Janice Milley and Karen Merrill Skoloff to host a drive-through veterans appreciation lunch event. The lunch was provided by the Wayside Inn of Sudbury and sponsored by the First Lieutenant Scott Milley Fund and served close to 70 veterans and their spouses. The town celebrated the festive month of December with a town center ornament display and a menorah and tree lighting. Thanks to Layla Frank, the town information officer, as well as to the library staff for organizing these events. residents from all corners of town created hundreds of uniquely decorated ornaments. Notably, 2020 was the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, Women's Right to Vote. It is fitting that on December 29, 2020, Governor Charlie Baker signed Chapter 245 of the Acts of 2020, containing Bill H-4388, an act making the charter of the town of Sudbury gender neutral. This petition was co-sponsored by Representative Carmen Gentile and Senators Michael Barrett and Jamie Eldridge. Thank you to our state representatives for helping to make this significant change happen. Standard & Poor's Rating Services assigned Sudbury its AAA long-term rating. Maintaining the highest credit rating possible gives Sudbury a strong position in the municipal bond market. This translates into the town having ready access to required capital at very favorable interest rates. The newly formed Bruce Rubin Rail Trail Advisory Task Force began working with the town's consultant, Busson O'Neill, to assist in advancing the design, development, construction, and long-term maintenance of the trail. State and federal funding for the construction of the Bruce Rubin Rail Trail is on track for 2022. I look forward to one day soon seeing friends and neighbors along the trail. MassDOT awarded a Complete Streets grant of almost $400,000 to improve pedestrian safety and accessibility. Also, the town, in coordination with the town of Concord, the town of Maynard, the town of Stowe, has received a $100,000 grant to assist with community transportation needs. The disposition of the quarry on Route 117 and the exchange of the land in the town center was formalized in early March. As a result of this transaction, the town gained approximately 42 acres of undeveloped land in our town center. The proposed development will allow the town to stay above the state-mandated 10% affordable housing threshold until 2030 or beyond, helping to ensure that the town can thoughtfully plan for housing for years to come. In November, the Select Board set our goals for 2021. These goals include revising financial policies and policies for capital planning, review of the Lincoln-Sudbury Regional High School Regional Agreement, proposed upgrade of Fire Station 2 on Route 20, moving the Bruce Rubin Rail Trail ahead for construction in 2022, evaluating the future use of the Sewataro property, and assessing transportation options. Building upon the Select Board statement on racial equity last June in response to the murder of George Floyd, the Select Board formed the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Commission. The commission will seek to support diversity, achieve equity, and foster inclusion for every member of this community. We can also take inspiration from groups including Sudbury for Racial and Social Justice, the METCO program, and the work of town staff, including Bethany Hadbab, our town social worker, and Esme Green, the Goodnow Library Director, and their incredible staff and interns who provide opportunities for each of us to become more informed about the diverse voices in our community. In early 2021, the Conservation Commission, Planning Board, the Select Board, and the Earth Removal Board met many times to apply their expertise and knowledge to set conditions for the Eversource Mass Central Rail Trail project. The town has continued its opposition to the Sudbury to Hudson Eversource Transmission Line project, which proposes to run 115-kilovolt power line underground along the MBT right-of-way in Sudbury. At this town meeting, you will decide whether to support Article 15, additional funding for litigation of the proposed power line project. The Select Board declared March to be Shadow Pandemic Awareness Month, which calls attention to physical and sexual violence during the COVID-19 pandemic. The Sudbury Wayland Lincoln Domestic Violence Roundtable has been instrumental in educating residents that our communities need to have zero tolerance for domestic violence. Over the past year, the Institute for Human-Centered Design conducted an evaluation of Sudbury's town-owned properties for prioritization and accessibility barrier removal. After gathering public feedback, the next step is to create a transition plan and start planning for future improvements. The Planning Board, Master Plan Steering Committee, and the Horsley-Witten Group consulting team held the final significant piece of public outreach for the town's master plan update process with its virtual open house. The master plan, a blueprint for Sudbury's future over the next decade or more, is currently being finalized by the Planning Board. In early March, the Select Board met with the Lincoln Board of Selectmen, now Select Board, to discuss common issues and to begin a reoccurring dialogue that we hope will allow us to advocate together on issues that impact our communities regionally. So as you can see, despite the pandemic, a great deal has been accomplished this past year in Sudbury. This speaks to the resilience and flexibility of our town staff, volunteers, and residents. Thank you. We, along with the country and world, were shocked and dismayed at the violent attack on the U.S. Capitol on January 6th. The attempted insurrection showed how our democracy can be fragile and should lead us to celebrate even more the profound responsibility and importance of town meeting. I look forward to the days we can safely hug our extended family and friends, eat together comfortably in a restaurant, or take a trip on an airplane without worry. Please continue to practice safety measures that have been proven to protect us from the COVID-19 virus. Please get tested and vaccinated. I am proud to serve this wonderful town as your Select Board member and chair. Thank you and welcome to the 2021 annual town meeting.
Thank you. Article 2, budget adjustments. Motion by Select Board Chair Drettler.
Is my mic on?
Yes. Yep.
Vote to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? Does the Select Board have a report?
The Select Board supports Article 2.
FinCom? Does FinCom have a report?
No report.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
FinCom has no report on Article 2.
Is there any discussion on this? The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Anyone opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 3, budget. Yes? Sir, your mic is not on. If you just wait a moment for that to start. No, it's still not on.
My name is Hank Surrett, 58 Longfellow Road. I ask the moderator to rule that Article 3 is not in order and should not be presented or debated, since the article contains insufficient information to inform the voters about the town's proposed expenditures and is thus inconsistent with fundamental principles of democracy and of the open town meeting. The inclusion of a link to the town manager budget in the warrant, the town's website, is inadequate for two reasons. First, it discriminates against and is useless for voters who do not have internet access or who cannot handle the things on the web. It's not fair notice to a significant segment of voters, some of whom are my contemporaries or older. I'm 74. In that context, I think it violates the Americans with Disabilities Act. Second, it contains insufficient information to allow voters to make meaningful decisions about whether to vote for or against or move to amend. Thank you.
Thank you. I do not find that it is out of order, and we're going to proceed with Article 3. A few notes on procedure. We will begin with a so-called limiting motion from the Finance Committee that proposes an appropriation not to exceed the amount required to fund the proposed budget. The limiting motion, if passed, will then establish the upper limit of the budget. A vote in favor of the motion does not mean that the town meeting has approved the particular distributions as set forth in the warrant, but rather establishes only the upper limit of the town's budget appropriation for fiscal year 2022. Once we dispose of the limiting motion, the Finance Committee will make a main motion on the budget. At that time, I will read line by line the items in the main motion. Absent a motion to reconsider the limiting motion, a voter can only make a motion to amend to reduce a line item or to increase one item and decrease another so that the total amount appropriated does not exceed the amount established by the limiting motion. In other words, it will be out of order to make a motion to increase a line item alone if that increase would cause the main budget figure to exceed the amount set by the limiting motion without first moving for reconsideration of the limiting motion. I now recognize Scott Smigler, co-chair of the Finance Committee, for the budget limiting motion. Mr. Smigler?
Move that the amount appropriated under the fiscal year 2022 budget not exceed the sum of $107,093,804.
Does that motion receive a second? It does. I will now ask Mr. Smigler to deliver the Finance Committee's statement of the town's financial condition. Mr. Smigler.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Hi, everybody. Next slide, or next. The Finance Committee, also referred to as FinCom, is a nine-member volunteer committee appointed by the town moderator. Our mission is to make objective and concise recommendations to town meeting on the annual budget and any other finance-related articles. Next. You can skip through this slide. And just as a note, if you open your warrant to part two, you can see our full report and data. Next slide. This year's budget is approximately $107 million, an increase of 1.4% over FY21, and within the no override limits of Proposition 2.5. As you can see from this chart, more than two-thirds of the budget goes to education expenses when you consider the employee benefits line item, which includes SBS. SBS and Sudbury's contribution to the ELS budget grew by 2.58% and 2.31%, respectively, with other town departments growing a more modest 0.89%. Next slide. A key focus of the Finance Committee's process is understanding year-over-year changes in the budget. This graph illustrates outliers for a given year. The blue bar is what's changed between FY21 and FY20. The red line shows what changed this budget year over past. Three quick things to note. One, employee benefits. The change this year is based on a much lower rate increase from the provider. Culture and Rec, FY21 had a large increase because the salary of employees was moved from the enterprise fund into the general operating budget. And also note in your warrant, you'll notice a decrease in town debt service of approximately $1 million, which is not shown in this graph. This expense was previously part of a reimbursement program from the MSBA, meaning that we received external funds to offset these expenses. So while it looks like our expense for debt service decreased by $1 million, it really did not. Next slide. From FY21 to FY22, revenue raised from real estate and personal property taxes is expected to grow 3.91%, which includes not just tax increases on current revenue, but revenue from other sources like new growth in town. This slide also shows that we are very dependent on real estate and personal property taxes. Next slide. So here's how this all nets out in terms of your tax bill. This chart shows the estimated tax impact of town meeting articles in FY22 for different home values. The highlighted column represents the FY21 average home value. So in FY21, a residence valued at $745,000 received a tax bill for $14,033. This year, for the average residence valued at $745,000, the approval of Article 3 will result in an additional tax bill of $327 to cover the operating budget, plus another $69 to cover debt exclusions approved in the past. Some recently approved projects, such as Fairbank, approved last year, will not impact this number for several more years. Article 4, which is the town manager's capital budget, would add $31 to the tax bill, resulting in a grand total of $427 over the last year for a house of this value. If you turn to FS-12 in your warrant, you can see how to calculate this tax bill for any specific residence. And if you flip to FS-25 in your warrant, you can see how the residential tax bill has changed over the years. Next slide, please. On FS-20 in your warrant, you can see a breakdown of all projects the town is currently making debt service payments for through 2052. This applies to projects approved prior to April 2021 that have actually been bonded by the town, like Camp Suataro, Police Station, and Broadacres. You can also see projects that have been approved but haven't yet been bonded, such as Fairbank, the Dutton Road Bridge, CSX Rail Acquisition, and the Sewer SRF loans. The known as well as anticipated debt service for these projects is graphed on this slide over the next 10 years. As you can see, in 2024, we'll begin making debt service payments for these new projects. Some of these projects are debt exclusions, which means they won't pressure budget directly. But indirectly, residents will begin seeing the impact in their annual tax bills. These realities, combined with significant needs related to future capital spending, make it critically important that we make improvement to our capital improvement plan. Next slide. I think you can just preload the bullets here. So COVID-19 has had major impact on our residents. From a municipal budgeting perspective, there have been both direct and indirect impacts, but they have been manageable. That's reflected in maintaining our AAA bond rating, according to the January S&P Global report. The Finance Committee was happy to see SPS propose its SMILE program in Article 23 to provide extra support this summer to students who need it. COLA for town departments and SBS has not yet been settled. Sorry, I'm having a little technical difficulties over here. LS agreed to a COLA of 0% increase for the next year. Out-of-district costs for LS and FY21 came in significantly above projections, which pressured budget this year and will likely pressure budgets in future years. There's potential for unbudgeted expenses not covered by state and federal grants. On OPEB, we were happy to see progress on both the SBS. On the SBS side, on LS, a $250,000 contribution compared to $383,000 in FY21 was noted. And then for town manager capital planning, there is progress in funding more of the capital through the levy this year compared to last, and we're happy to see this progress and would like it to continue, but ultimately that all be funding being funded within the levy. Next slide. FinCom recommends approval of Article 3, 8-0. Thank you.
Thank you. I will now recognize representatives of each of the cost centers to explain their positions on the budget. Town Manager Henry Hayes will speak for the town, Superintendent Brad Crozier for Sudbury Public Schools, and Superintendent Bella Wong for Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. As you may know, Article 2, Section 11 of the bylaws provides that the initial presentation of the proponents for an article may not exceed 10 minutes in length unless consent is given by the majority of town meeting. In the past, town meeting has recognized the inherent difficulties of having three cost centers present within 10 minutes and has authorized each administrator to speak for 5 minutes for a total of 15 minutes. I would entertain such a motion now if someone wishes to make it. Is there a second? And again, this is a majority rules. All in favor? Anyone opposed? It passes by well more than majority. I now recognize Town Manager Henry Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I am Henry Hayes, Town Manager, and I'm here to speak regarding Article 3. The professional staff has worked hard to develop a conservative budget to maintain services while being thoughtful to the taxpayers. We diligently worked with the following objectives in mind: developing FY22 budget within Proposition 2.5, maintain certain level service, maintain employee compensation and future planning, continue aggressively managing the employee benefits short and long term, fund capital program budget, and develop a budget document with recommended guidelines and procedures set forth by the government Finance Officers Association. And so based on these goals and keeping in mind our revenue and fixed costs, the town manager's budget was created collaboratively between the three cost centers, as stated, and also our department heads, reflecting functional needs and institutional values. I greatly appreciate all of our department heads, our school superintendent, select board, finance committee, capital advisory committee for their participation and others. So next slide, please. There we go. Thank you. No, go back if you would. I apologize. There we go. All right. So you'll see here that total revenues and available funds equals $108 million, $195,984. That is including free cash as well as the town manager's budget. Next slide, please. So on this slide, you'll see that we have the bottom line total operating budget of $107,093,804 with a percentage increase of 1.4, as previously stated by Finance Committee. The education of our students is accounted for by way of LS and SPS and vocational education. We have general government, public safety, public works, human service, cultural recreation, townwide operating and transfers. All of that equals $89,829,415. Then we have town debt, employee benefits, and OPEB, or other post-employment benefits, which takes us to the previously stated over $107 million. Next slide, please. So this slide reflects both the revenues and the expenditures, and it is balanced. Next slide, please. So the change in the Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School assessment that we received on this year was a decrease of 0.05. The total apportionment for us is, our assessment is 87.85%. Next slide, please. The budget, again, it is level service. There's no additional personnel being added, and through the ingenuity and the exercises of providing services, we are able to continue to sustain as desired. Next slide, please. You'll see some changes here, an increase in contract services for conservation. You'll see additional hours for planning community development. Next, please. Public Works has an increase of $17,000 for municipal separate storm sewer systems, and that's what the MS4 is. Next slide, please. Overall, we have an increase for the senior center of $12,000 in expenses. Next slide, please. Then you'll see an overall decrease in townwide operating and transfers. There's various things that goes into this, so some of those things are represented on the slide. Next slide, please. Then we'll have employee benefits, and so those employee benefits account for both the town departments as well as Sudbury Public Schools, and the overall increase is 3.9% over the previous year. Some of those things include insurances and other things, as noted on the slide. Next slide, please. All right, and then you'll see the other post-employment benefit trust contributions. You'll note that there is an increase on this. However, last year you may remember that there was two fund sources that went into. Our goal is to sustain $600,000 to $680,000 annually, and that's where we are. Next slide, please. All right, and our debt decrease overall of $1,043,207 due to school construction, debt retirement, and a few other projects coming on. Next, please. And our headcount, once again, stays the same. Last slide, I believe. So our goal, of course, is to sustain a safe, secure, serviced, and strong Sudbury. Thank you.
Thank you. I now recognize Mr. Crozier.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. I would like to begin by thanking the staff, parents, and community for supporting the district during the pandemic. The full return of students this year has helped us to plan for next year, and this budget reflects students in school 5 days a week. Next slide. I think we skipped one. I think we gotta go back one. Mark, can you go back one? Thank you. Thank you. The school committee voted on December 6, 2020, to approve the FY22 school operating budget request of $40,630,742 to educate 298 students. This budget meets the town manager's budget guidance and represents an increase of 2.58% over the FY21 appropriation, which is a $1,021,908 increase. Next slide. This budget supports the district goals and the community's commitment to high-quality education for the children of Sudbury. For town meeting purposes, I want to focus this presentation on the budget. However, my prior presentations to committees and community groups include a deeper dive into the vision and goals for the schools. Next slide. The FY22 school budget was developed by the school administration using a zero-based budgeting methodology and reflects a careful and thoughtful balancing of the district's priorities and the students' needs while respecting the fiscal realities. The administration worked with their building staff to identify spending priorities and, in some cases, reallocating funds to higher priorities. The FY22 budget includes 5.6 new or restored positions, including 3 custodians to ensure safe and clean buildings, an additional class to teach advanced level math in 8th grade, added intervention supports, tutor, and algebra teacher due to students' projected needs. Next slide. This slide shows the per pupil cost as compared to other districts that the school committee has identified as peer comparisons. Sudbury is represented on this slide in orange and is the 4th lowest spending compared to these districts. Next slide. One of the major budget drivers is school enrollment. We constantly track our enrollment and use several models for determining student enrollment projections, including using a third-party expert. For the 21-22 school year, we are projecting 2,498 students, which is 40 fewer students than the 2021 school year. In summary, the school department asks for the approval of its recommended operating budget, as we believe it is a reasonable and appropriate request to fund the Sudbury schools in order to provide an excellent education for all students and families. We have pre-purchased items at the end of last year to mitigate the impacts of unknowns in this school year and have prudently used grant funds to address new COVID-related expenses. While the future is not completely known, we believe this budget will support the students at SPS next school year in a full in-person model. Finally, I want to thank the school administration, the staff, the parents, and the students of Sudbury schools for your thoughtful and hard work to ready the schools for the return of students this year and for next. Thank you to the Sudbury taxpayers and the community for your ongoing support of the education of the children of Sudbury. Thank you.
Thank you. I now recognize Ms. Long.
Thank you. Stella Long, Superintendent Principal for Lincoln Sudbury. It's my privilege to present to you the FY22 budget for your consideration and approval. Next slide, please. The budget represents our aspirational goals for our students. I welcome you to visit our website for our full strategic plan. Next slide, please. Our enrollment projection for last year, this year, and next year are essentially the same. I note that between last year and this year, we reduced 3.5 FTEs in professional staff. Next slide, please. The current median class size for this year was increased modestly across all departments due to that change in FTE, but most notably in computer science, median class size of 23 to 26. Next slide, please. Before preparing the budget for this next year, we had some true cost-saving measures. When I say true cost-saving measures, reductions in expenses that would not impact educational program. The teachers initiated contact with school committee and agreed to a 0% COLA for the next school year. The teachers association also agreed to the school committee to change our vendor for health insurance. LS, different from the other departments, we bear our own health insurance costs and the OPEB contributions as well. This netted a decrease of $200,000 for next year in expenses, decreased utilities, and also continued decline in the debt service, which will expire entirely in FY26. Next slide, please. Despite all the cost reductions with level service, we still had a funding gap of $465,000. So next slide, please. The driver for that gap was we're estimating an increase of $700,000 in the tuition line, and so needed for FY22. Next slide, please. This gives you an overview of our tuition costs over the last several years and projected for next year. So $700,000 more in the tuition line for next year, but we are increasing our circuit breaker assumption by $200,000. So what you'll see in the budget is a net increase of $500,000. Next slide, please. So the proposed adjustments to close the budget gap, the first is the one I just described. And also, this next year, we'll be contributing $250,000 to the OPEB Trust Fund instead of 383109, which we have done for the last several years. But by the end of this year, the OPEB Trust will be at $2 million, which has been accumulated over the last 6 years. We also made some other expense reductions, but I also want to note that we are adding a section for Mandarin next year, so we'll be able to offer three levels of Mandarin, and also an additional FTE for computer science, and as I noted, that median class size was high. Next slide, please. This summarizes all the financial assumptions, what we leveled, what we increased, what we decreased. Next slide, please. This is a summary of all the budget lines, and we are grateful. We are at a 2.8% increase for FY22. The total amount is $34,864,792. Next slide, please. Hold right there. The LS budget minus Chapter 70 and grant funds is then allocated between Sudbury and Lincoln. And so what's calculated is Sudbury and Lincoln minus the minimum contributions dictated by the state, and then the remainder is split according to the regional agreement between the two towns, which is based on a three-year running enrollment. This slide shows that actually Lincoln went up more in enrollment than Sudbury. So the allocation of the assessment shifted to Lincoln this year. Next slide. So again, this is the total budget number. And then the next slide will show what the assessments are to Lincoln and Sudbury. For Lincoln, it's $3,876,655. For Sudbury, $27,330,369. They express 8.94% increase for Lincoln and 2.3% for Sudbury. And the last slide is just a summary of the capital items, which will be part of Article 4. Thank you. And I also at this time extend my gratitude to all our staff, our parents, our students, but also especially to all the town officials that are here. We would not have been able to go through such a difficult year without all their support, guidance, and advice. Thank you.
Thank you. Does the Select Board wish to be heard on the limiting motion?
The Select Board supports this article.
Does anyone else wish to be heard on the limiting motion? This requires a majority vote All in favor, please raise your cards. Thank you. Anyone opposed? This passes by more than majority. Having established the upper limit of the budget, I will now ask Mr. Smigler to make a motion regarding the proposed expenditures. Mr. Smigler?
Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the column FY22 recommended for fiscal year 2022 as printed in the warrant.
Does that receive a second? Does the Finance Committee wish to be heard on the main article under Article 3?
We'll defer to our report.
Does the Select Board wish to be heard on the main motion under Article 3?
We support this article.
I will now read each line of the proposed budget and ask that if anyone has a motion to amend. Remember, because town meeting has enacted the limiting motion, any motion to increase a line item must include a provision to decrease another line item in the same amount, unless a voter first makes a motion to reconsider the limiting motion. Line 300, Education, Sudbury Public Schools. Nope, your mic's not working just yet.
Is Hank Surrett Longfellow Road?
Yes.
When is it appropriate to speak in opposition to the entire budget?
That would be momentary, but it was just brought to my attention that Mr. Smigler didn't read the second part of the motion, so I would like to go back and have him reread that, and then I will open it up to any questions or comments. Mr. Smigler, I think there was a second slide on the for the motion.
So would you like me to start again?
Sure. Why don't you start again?
Move that the town appropriate the sums of money set forth in the column FY22 recommended for fiscal year 2022 as printed in the warrant. Said sums to be raised by taxation, except that the following items to be raised and designated by transfer from available funds and interfund transfers. To transfer from ambulance reserve for appropriation account to item 200, public safety, $660,000 to authorize the town manager to transfer within the FY22 budget, $1,338,286 from item 900, employee benefits, town and SVS, and $625,000 from item 1,000, OPEB trust contribution, town and SBS, to the OPEB trust established to meet expenses for post-employment health and life insurance programs for eligible retirees and to expend such funds for that purpose, and to authorize multi-year contracts in excess of 3 years either by renewal, extension, or purchase options in accordance with the provisions of Massachusetts General Law, Chapter 30B, Section 12, upon determination by the Chief Procurement Officer to be the most advantageous option.
Thank you. I'm going to read the items line by line and ask if anybody has a comment specifically related to those lines. We'll take that as we go through it, and then I will open it up to any comments or questions. Line 300, Education, Sudbury Public Schools. Line 300, Education, LS Regional High School. Line 300, Education Vocational. Line 100, General Government. Line 200, Public Safety. Line 400, Public Works. Line 500, Human Services. Line 600, Culture and Recreation. Line 800, townwide operating and transfers. Line 700, town debt service. Line 900, employee benefits, town and SPS. Line 1000, OPEB trust contribution, town and SPS. Does anybody wish to be heard on the main motion under Article 3? Yes, sir.
Hexter at Longfellow Road. I rise in opposition to the budget articles and ask that they be defeated. If they are defeated, it will then be the responsibility of the Select Board and FinCom to come back to the special town meeting with a warrant that contains enough detail to illuminate what they're asking us to spend. My fundamental concern is that the warrant and supplemental materials are inadequate to inform the voters about what of our money they wish to spend and where. This is my 43rd annual town meeting, and I come to this position after decades of activism, serving on the personnel board, etc. Sometimes my arguments have won, and sometimes they have lost. That's all right, so long as the voters exercising their rights are given the information to decide. I trust the wisdom of Sudbury's voters, but they can only exercise it if adequately informed. I was dissatisfied with the budget articles 2 years ago and raised those concerns in private with the then moderator and several members of the select board. I was dissatisfied again last year and again raised those concerns in private. Since those conversations did not lead to change, I'm raising them now in public. Historically, the warrant contained the requisite detail. Moderators Owen Todd and Tom Dignan insisted on these details, and I respected them for their leadership, even though Mr. Dignan defeated me when I ran against him. If you go to the town's website, please look at the warrants in the 1980s and 90s. I was involved in writing the 1981 warrant. With the warrants in detail, the voters knew where the bones were buried and what the town wanted to spend. Under our town meeting form of government, dating back to the formation of the town, the voters in meeting assembled are the town's legislature. They cannot fairly act in that role if they're not given the requisite information. Based on the Freedom of Information Act's requests and responses to my 43 years of town government, I'm aware of several significant areas of concern about which the voters should have detailed information and should be able to consider. These are only a few of the ones known to me, and doubtless there are other problems I don't know about. And here are three examples, and I'm not going to go into many more. When the library trustees voted to terminate their relationship with the Friends of the Library, I filed an open meeting law complaint and served a Freedom of Information Act request. That revealed the library had a PR consultant who appears to have spent somewhere between $50,000 and $75,000 in a PR effort against the Friends. It appears that that PR consultant is continuing to work for the town, for the library. That money is nowhere set out in the budget. I can't find it in any of the documents. Do we as a town want to pay a PR consultant to attack the Friends of the Library? We ought to have the right to decide on town meeting floor whether that is appropriate or not appropriate. I couldn't find enough information to make a motion to amend. We know the town operates an ambulance service and received revenues of $660,000. What we don't know is what the actual costs are of running the ambulance service and how much we lost. I just couldn't find it. We know there are people working on the ambulance, and we know there are direct and indirect costs. It appears that the town is subsidizing this ambulance service. In contrast, communities like Framingham, Quincy, Grafton, Gardner put their ambulance service out to bid, and they are paid by those vendors for the franchise. And those vendors are then required to meet the town's specifications. Should the town continue to operate its own ambulance service, or should this go out to bid? We don't know enough based on the warrant to figure out what this is actually costing us. Is it $500,000? Is it a million? Is it a million and a half? We don't know. This is a matter that's appropriate for public scrutiny and debate. The warrant doesn't illuminate it. Now, the warrant, for third example, the warrant tells us that four police people have salaries of $105,000 base. Neither the warrant nor the manager's budget tells us that almost all of the police have paid much more than that, including details, overtime, seniority awards, and allowances, without including retirement contributions and health insurance. It appears, based on a Freedom of Information Act request I did last year, that the majority of the police make more than $100,000, and many make more than $150,000. The question of whether we want that high-paid police force and those lavish salaries should be laid out before the town. The town should be able to decide whether this is what we want, whether this is not what we want, whether we have too many police people, we have too few, These are all matters that should be before town meeting for public discussion and debate. This warrant, which is a black box, does not tell us that. You know, the Washington Post tells us every day democracy dies in darkness. Say no to darkness. This budget spends almost every last dime it can under Prop 2.5, and I will tell you, in this year of economic distress for many of our neighbors, we should have cut the budget, not increased it. I know that personally, I went into my pocket to buy groceries for a number of my neighbors during this past period. So let's defeat this article. If my arguments do not prevail today, I want the people of the town to engage in a process so the next time we come to a town meeting, we actually know what all the numbers are and what we're voting for or against. Thank you.
Is there anyone in the handicap accessible area that wishes to be heard?
Yes. Can you hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chairman. Stan Kaplan, 98 Victoria. I have a simple question. It may have already been answered, but we can't hear very well back here. The question is, what will be the percent increase of the FY22 budget over the residential rate as it exists today?
Mr. Hayes, can you answer that question?
Sure.
Would you be able to repeat that question, please?
Okay. I'm just looking for what the, on the residential tax rate, what is the percent increase of the additional budgetary items that are in the FY22 budget, and what as you described, and what result is there in the residential percentage wise tax rate? Is that clear?
Yes, we're with
the... Madam, if I may.
Sure, please.
Yeah, I if I may defer to our finance director, Dennis Cohen.
Thank you. Mr. Cohen.
Thank you. Dennis Cohen, finance director. As was mentioned by the Finance Committee earlier, if you look on FS12, the estimated tax increase will be 3.04%.
Thank you.
That's
3.04%.
Thank you.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on this motion? Mr. Travers?
Tom Travis, 32 Old Framingham Road. I just have a question. What percentage of the OPEB liability?
I'm sorry, you did cut out the last part.
What percentage of our total OPEB liability for LS and for the town are we at with our present funding scheme?
Mr. Hayes, would you be able to answer that question?
So if Henry Hayes, town manager, is your, I can respond regarding the town and SPS. Is your question, what is the percentage change?
Well, my question is, every year we have an actuarial study about what our total liability is for OPEB. How much do we have in the fund as a percentage of that total liability for both LS and the town?
Okay. Excellent. So once again, I'll defer to our finance director, Dennis Cohen.
Mr. Cohen?
I apologize. I don't have the exact number, but I don't have the LS number because it's a separate entity, but we're in the neighborhood of 12%.
Thank you.
Madam Moderator?
What about LS?
Mr. Smigler? Sure. Ms. Wong, if you could answer that question.
Bella Wong, Superintendent Principal for Lincoln-Sudbury. Our most recent actuarial study for Lincoln-Sudbury has our outstanding liability at about $20 million. And as I stated earlier, our OPEB trust by the end of this fiscal year will be at $2 million. We have in the budget to put $250,000 in the next year. And so we've been contributing over a period of time. We've also the strategy of changing our health insurance and percent contribution or other pieces that affect our liability. But that's for LF.
So if I understand, between the town and LS, we have only funded about 10% to 12% of our total liability.
Where it stands today, but also that $2 million was accumulated over the last 6 years.
So I understand that.
I would say for the town and LS that we both, this is a high priority, and we've been targeting long-term strategies to address that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Moderator.
Who said that?
FinCom.
Oh.
If you turn to FS6 in your warrant, you'll see the town and SBS current estimates on OPEB liability.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard? This requires a majority vote. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by more than majority. Article 4, FY22 capital budget. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move to appropriate the sum of $1,102,180 for the purchase or acquisition of capital items, including but not limited to capital equipment, construction, engineering, design, and renovation to buildings, including equipping of vehicles and all incidental and related expenses for projects, with the sum of $900,000 to be transferred from free cash and the sum of $202,180 to be raised by taxation, and to authorize the town manager to allocate funds as needed between the underlying departments as shown in the following chart. FY22 operating capital budget, Sudbury Public Schools, $253,000. LS Regional High School, $114,727. Information systems, $50,000. Police, $30,000. Fire, $256,000. Public Works, $215,000. Combined facilities, $183,453. Should be a comma there. For a total of $1,102,180.
Thank you. Is there a second? And a presentation by Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. So the Town Manager's capital operating budget, as stated, is a grand total of $1,102,180. I want to thank specifically our Finance Director, Dennis Cohane, our Assistant Town Manager and HR Director, Marianne Billadue, Combined Facilities Director, Bill Barletta, and I will run through the slides as quickly and efficiently as I can. Ultimately, next slide, please. These items are largely under $100,000 in a single year, $200,000 multiple years. Next slide, please. The Capital Improvement Advisory Committee does look at items that are over $100,000 in a single year and over $200,000 in multiple years. Next slide, please. Multiple funding sources include tax levy, free cash, overlay surplus, and other combinations to include debt when appropriate. Next slide, please. This particular chart shows all of the items that are listed being sourced by free cash and the tax levy combination. Next slide, please. So we'll begin with the items. Various building improvements, $75,000. Facilities, This will help in our ADA transition plan, some police adjustments, as well as some unexpected repairs and some planned long-term and ongoing type items. Next slide, please. These radio receivers, police, $30,000. And this is to improve our network so that we are able to have ample and responsive timing as we go forth and relay information. Next slide, please. Is pickup truck with plow unit 2 DPW, $70,000. So as you may remember from previous year and years, there is a plan that is structured to be very purposeful in replacing some of the vehicles as we go forward, so we don't have a large load of vehicles all at one time being replaced, as it was common in 2015 purchase. Next slide, please. Engine number 8, replacement. Fire department, $55,000. This helps to respond to brush fires. This is actually replacing a 2003 vehicle. Next slide, please. This is Loring School Access Walkway, SPS, and facilities. This is, Sudbury Public Schools and Facilities, $87,000. This is a repeat request initially put forth in 2020. This will help with some ADA compliance. Next slide, please. Dump truck with plow, unit 29, $95,000, DPW. And so this will help to transport materials and equipment and also facilitate the work that we need to do in various locations, smooth or rough terrain. Next slide is fire service M1 replacement vehicle, fire department, $55,000. This is a 2006 Chevy, and it is well beyond its service life anticipated. It's also transports fire equipment as well as various uses. Next slide, please. Half ton pickup truck facilities, $28,309. This is a 5% increase from the current budget years because we pulled it off last year as a matter of courtesy and respect for the ongoing pandemic. It is replacing a 2011 vehicle. Next slide, please. Half ton truck slash van. Ultimately, we're looking at a cargo van, a transit cargo van, $40,144. This is a repeat request. Again, this is one that was pulled from previous years. Previous year. Next slide, please. Fire alarm monitoring system, Vision 21 replacement. This is a fire department, $91,000. All town buildings, schools, some nursing facilities, apartments, condos, and private schools will be impacted by this this adjustment, $91,000. Next slide, please. Tennis court repair, resurfacing 6 courts on this property, Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School, $45,000. However, the Sudbury portion is $39,410 for this. Ultimately, we know that our courts have deterioration and the cracks in those spot repairs are not sufficient for safety. Next slide, please. Curtis Boiler number 3 replacement, Sudbury Public Schools and Facilities, $80,000. This is a request originally put in last year. The current system is over 20 years. This is a 3 boiler system, so it needs all 3 systems, and costs and acquisition of parts to sustain is now beyond the capability of adequate sustainment. So next slide, please. Car number 3 replacement, fire department, $55,000. The actual vehicle that is being replaced will actually be shifted over to another department. Next slide, please. Paging clocks and bell systems. This is Sudbury Public Schools facilities, $25,000. The original request was in fiscal year 18 was the original. This is continuation work. And so there's one more phase in FY23 anticipated. We have next slide, area lift, and this is a Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School request. The Sudbury portion is $35,907, and this assists with high-reach capabilities and repairs. Next slide, please. This is Loring Hot Water Heating Main Circulating Pump Replacement, Sudbury Public Schools and Facilities, $25,000. The previously refurbished pump is no longer able to be repaired
as it is. So it needs a replacement. Next slide, please, is 15-passenger van, Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School, to help to transport to activities and athletic travel. The Sudbury portion is $39,410. Next slide, please. Kitchen, walk-in, refrigeration, replacement. Sudbury Public Schools and Facilities, $45,000, a 2016 original request. And so this this system is at service, beyond service life. And so it needs to be repaired, replaced, sorry. Next slide, please, is the scanning, archive, and paper documents, information systems department, $50,000. The recurring request over 5 years total, and that is to do all the scanning that we need to do to bring in the activities to safeguard our information over time and be able to search those things in a very adequate and efficient way. Next slide, please. Is the regarding Broadacres Farm. Next slide, please. Broadacres Farm, there are three sheds, demolition of the three sheds out there, facilities request. We will be in communication continual. We've already started communication with the Historical Commission on this. This request is in advance of any extreme safety hazards that are unable to be mitigated properly, but we will do every process that is required. Next slide, please. Townwide, walkway, construction, DPW request, $50,000. FY17 initial request, and this is for the safety and security of our personnel across the town during that are traversing by way of walkways. Last slide, our effort is to sustain a safe, secure, serviced, and strong Sudbury. Thank you, Madam Moderator.
Thank you. The Finance Committee and Select Board support this. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 4? Yes.
Mara Houston, Peckham Road. Question on the furnaces for the building as well as all these trucks. With global warming being a reality, what is the town's plan to move us off of fossil fuels for both the vehicles as well as the buildings?
Mr. Barletta, would you like to answer that question? Also, Can you repeat your name and address?
Mara Houston, 578 Peckham Road.
Thank you.
Hello, Bill Barletta, Combined Facilities Director. Mara, regarding the units that are being replaced and repaired right now, those buildings are completely invested in gas at this point, so these are replacements and repairs in those systems to keep those systems going. As far as electric vehicles, we do have some. And in the future, through our Energy and Sustainability Committee, we're adding, plan to add some vehicle chargers and whatever vehicles we can practically add to the fleet for perhaps non-emergency vehicles such as IT, conservation, et cetera. Towards the future, through the Energy and Sustainability Committee, which I am the staff liaison to, we do have an eye towards that and understanding that that's the future of buildings in general. We're currently in conversations with some vendors for potential rooftop solar PV and canopies in town buildings that will then feed into the grid and help us in that respect. But it's a process. We've begun it somewhat. I would say it's in its infancy in the building-wide category. In vehicles, it's much further along, but we definitely do have an eye towards that.
Follow-up question, then. Thanks, Bill, for the answer. For some of the lighter, I understand for the big, huge machines, fire trucks and whatever, they're fossil fuel. But for the lighter trucks, the pickup trucks, the vans, can we at least get hybrid vehicles going? I mean, there's a lot of hybrid pickup trucks and a lot of hybrid vans out there.
I may have to defer to my peers and my colleagues for the other departments of which are really suitable. They have come a long way. We do have two in service now. And that comes in tandem with vehicle charging and locations to charge those. It is a possibility, and I think I would, again, turn to the department heads that request those specifically if the current technology meets those needs.
Madam Moderator, from me?
Yes.
Yeah. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. When it comes to the vehicles, future purchases. The discussions and the review process does include the process of the capability of utilizing the electronic and hybrid. We do have a charging station at DPW currently.
Thank you. Mr. Travers?
Yes. The capital.
Could you please state your name and address?
Tom Travers, 32 Oak Framingham Road, on the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. We take no position on this article because most of the items were underneath our threshold under the bylaw. The only one that we did review was the information systems one, which we approved 7-0. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard?
Hi, Kelly Piotrowski, 238 Goodmans Hill Road. Simple question. For the digitization of the archives, what company has been engaged to do that work, and how many linear feet did they promise to image for $50,000? Thank you.
Mr. Hayes, would you have that answer?
If I may have a moment to confer.
Thank you.
Thank you for your patience. The company name is DataBank, and the currently we have a rotating approach through the various departments. The goal is to get right now is to get the plans that are 11 by 17 and larger going per department. However, the detail of the question of how many linear, I don't have that answer at this time.
Thank you. The quantum of vote required for this article is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Anyone opposed, please raise your cards. That passes by more than majority. Article 5, FY22 Transfer Station Enterprise Fund. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move to appropriate the sum of $291,303 for the Transfer Station Enterprise Fund for FY22 and further to authorize use of an additional $17,800 for indirect costs, such sums to be raised from $309,103,000 in FY22 receipts of the enterprise as set forth in the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So next slide, please. The first portion that I will speak to is a general statement that is applicable to all enterprise funds. So enterprise funds gives the community the flexibility to account separately for all financial activities associated with a broad range of municipal services. It establishes a separate accounting and financial reporting mechanism for municipal services for which a fee is charged in exchange for goods or services. Revenues and expenses of these services are segregated into a fund with financial statements separated from all other governmental activities. Next slide, please, will show an overview of Articles 5, 6, and 7. The next slide, please. This also shows, there we go, thank you. Article 5. Transfer Station, Enterprise Fund. Here you will see the listing of the
Total personnel services that is $167,653. Total expenses that is including general expenses, maintenance, hauling and disposing, recycling, resource recovery, and prior year encumbrances, which is zero for this year, is $123,650 with a grand total direct costs of $291,303. The indirect costs are $17,800, totaling $309,103, and our total revenues are projected at $309,103, which is a balanced budget.
Thank you. Both the Finance Committee and the Select Board support Article 5. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 5?
Ralph Tyler, One Beacon Lane. So I had a question. If enterprise funds are funds that have to be established, if there's fee charges, I didn't see anywhere in the warrant where the ambulance fees are set up in an enterprise fund. So could I get some explanation? I know it's maybe somewhat irrelevant, but it's just confusing to me.
Yes,
Town Manager Hayes?
Yeah. So, Henry Hayes, Town Manager. So, the ambulance fees is not an enterprise fund by definition.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 5? The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed, please raise your cards. That appears to pass by unanimously. Article 6, FY22 Pool Enterprise Fund. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move to appoint to appropriate the sum of $438,753 for the Pool Enterprise Fund for FY22 and further to authorize use of an additional $25,383 for indirect costs. Said sums to be raised from $464,136 in FY22 receipts of the enterprise as set forth in the article.
Thank you. Is there a second? Presentation by Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. The next slide will show Article 6. Article 6, Pool Enterprise. You'll see here that all of the personnel services equals $255,253. The total expenses, which includes general expenses, equipment maintenance, utilities, programs, and zero prior year encumbrances, is $183,500. Direct costs are $438,753. Indirect costs is $25,383, with a total cost of $464,130. And our enterprise receipts transfers in is zero for this fiscal year, and our transfer in is zero. The receipts is equals $464,136. And this presents a balanced budget.
Thank you. Both the Finance Committee and the Select Board support this article. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 6? Ms. Houston.
Mara Houston, Keekham Road. I just want to underscore Frank Surrett's comment earlier about transparency of finances. That spreadsheet was not included in the warrant. That's an example of something that, if it were in the warrant, would provide more transparency to the financials of the town and all the rest of the financial slides, because they're not. I just looked in the financial section. I didn't see that detail in the financial section. Thank you.
Does anybody else wish to be heard about Article 6? quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed, please raise your cards. That appears that passes unanimously. Article 6, FY 22, I'm sorry, Article 7, FY 22 Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move to appropriate the sum of $205,403 for the Recreation Field Maintenance Enterprise Fund for FY 22 and further to authorize use of an additional $25,383 for indirect costs. Said sums to be raised from $230,786 in FY 22 receipts of the enterprise as set forth in the article.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Article 7, which is the, there we go. It is the, you'll see that this personnel services is $129,903. Total expenses is including field maintenance, part maintenance, and utilities, $65,000. Transferred to turf field stabilization, $10,500. Direct costs, $205,403. The indirect costs, $25,383, with a total cost of $230,786, with the enterprise receipts equaling same to be a balanced budget.
Thank you. The Finance Committee and the Select Board both support Article 7. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 7? The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. Everyone in favor, please raise your cards. Anyone opposed, please raise your card. That passes by well more than majority. Article 8, FY 21, Snow and Ice Transfer, motion by Chair Drettler.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $349,264 to be transferred from free cash to FY 21 account 400, Public Works.
Is there a second? Thank you. Presentation by Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. So the snow and ice budget is the only account that the town can spend into a deficit. This year, we've had, we're requesting $349,264 from free cash to offset snow and ice deficit. Totals have sustained since the 30th of April, 2021. The total of next slide, please. We've had between October of 2020 and February of 2021, we had 13 winter snow events. We've had some since then, and that's what got us to the expenditures that we have as of the 30th of April. And so we've had many, many more incidences that have been immeasurable or no accumulation, but we treated, we do show the snowfall as well as the salt use.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
FinCom recommends approval.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Finance Committee recommends approval.
Okay. Does the Select Board have a report?
Select Board recommends approval.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 8? You can make your way up to the microphone and stand behind the other gentleman, please.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. There are two items here of concern to me. One, this year, I don't know whether we've had a whole new crop of drivers in the plows or not, but they caused considerable damage in many neighborhoods, particularly mine, Rolling Lane and Jarman in that area. And I know the town did come by when people complained and tried to repair or reseed the And I don't know what the solution is here. Presumably there were some new drivers who didn't know the streets well. And I'm just wondering if the town can be somehow proactive next year. And maybe if they have new drivers, they should take a tour of the streets beforehand or something so that they become more familiar with the streets so they don't do quite so much damage. I was fortunate I put my sticks out early and close together. Half of them were knocked over, and I replaced them multiple times, even with that. But some neighbors were really impacted significantly. The other is I object strongly to the use of salt. I heard, you know, a year or two ago that somehow was environmentally better. I don't buy that argument at all, and I think it has created a real problem. Yeah, you know, it's bad for adjoining vegetation. It's bad for our cars in terms of rusting them out more, and bad for people who walk their dogs, and they're picking up the salt in their paws and dragging it in the house and making a real mess. So I'd like to see us return to a much higher percentage of sanding like we had for many, many years, and get out of the mode of distributing salt, except perhaps maybe in key incident areas. Thank you.
Sir, did you wish to be heard?
Nick Furnace, 255 Peckham Road. I just want to jump onto what Jim said about the salt use, especially for those of us that have wells. We really implore the town to look into reducing the impact of salt on our roadways. Thank you.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 8? Somebody in the back. Yes, you can step up to the microphone there.
Is this working?
Greg, I can hear you, yep.
Greg Hamill, 16 Pine Street. I would like to express my concern that, as the other previous speakers mentioned, have the drivers go around the town prior to snowstorm, because the end of our street, the fire hydrant has been plowed into every year, and so it requires some of us to walk down the street and try to dig it out. Thank you.
Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 8? Quantum of vote required for Article 8 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 9, unpaid bills. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move to indefinitely postpone.
Is there a second? Thank you. The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor? I'm sorry. If anybody would like to hear from a town accountant, she's here to explain this article.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. There are no unpaid bills.
Thank you. As I mentioned, the quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Anyone opposed, please raise your card. That passes unanimously. Article 10. This is the first article on the consent calendar. In order to expedite town meeting and save valuable time for discussion of key issues, Sudbury utilizes a consent calendar to facilitate passage of certain articles that appear to raise no controversy. This year, the consent calendar contains 16 articles, numbers 10, 11, 12, 17, 18, 19, 20, 22, and 29 through 36. Town tradition had been that a single voter could ask that an article be held from the consent calendar, and it would be done. At the 2020 annual town meeting, it was voted favorably to require a majority vote to hold an article from the consent calendar. We will continue this requirement for this town meeting. The quantum of vote required to pass the consent calendar will be the strictest quantum of vote required by by any individual article on it, which based on these 16 articles is a majority. I will read through the list of articles on the consent calendar. If you wish to seek a vote to hold an article, please raise your card when I get to it. We will then hold a vote to determine whether that article will be pulled from the consent calendar. If you would like to ask a clarifying question about an article, please raise your card and indicate so that we can address your question. I will now read the list of articles on the consent calendar. Article 10, Chapter 90, Highway Funding. Article 11, FY22 Stabilization Fund. In the back, please. You just make your way to a microphone, please.
Stephen Wyman, 114 Old Lancaster Road. This was actually in regards to Article 10. I was wondering if the town was making any efforts to look to pave with semi-permeable materials specifically for roadways as opposed to impermeable surfaces, given the impact of impermeable paved surfaces on watersheds, acidity in soil, and general environmental effects.
And this is related to Article 10?
Yeah.
Okay. Town Manager Hayes?
Madam Moderator, I yield to DPW Director Dan Nason.
Thank you.
Madam Moderator?
Thank you.
Dan Nason, DPW Director. Very good question. This article is actually specific for accepting the funds from the state. It's a housekeeping article. But to answer your question, pervious pavement systems are utilized in specific areas. We're not utilizing them on town roadways right now for the simple fact that I want to make sure when we capture items such as hydrocarbons or whatnot, it's just not percolated directly into the ground. So typically go into a catch basin with a deep sump and hood so we can capture it.
Thank you.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you. I believe I left off on Article 11, FY22 Stabilization Fund. Article 12, FY22 Revolving Fund Spending Limits. Article 17, Marlboro Road Culvert Replacement. Article 18, Front End Loader with Plow. Article 19, multi-purpose sidewalk tractor. Article 20, six-wheel combo body dump truck with plow and wing. Article 22, beans tested senior tax exemption extension. Article 29, Community Preservation Fund, Dr. Bill Adelson Playground Improvements. Article 30, Community Preservation Fund, Frank Feely Fields Improvement. Article 31, Community Preservation Fund, Historic Preservation Plan. Article 32, Community Preservation Fund, Housing Production Plan. Article 33, Community Preservation Fund, Housing Trust Allocation. In the back, please.
Stephen Lyman, 114 Old Lancaster Road. I was wondering if the town had any specific efforts to look into housing justice in terms of how the economic ability for people to live in this community impacts both the state community at large and also the population inside. I know that there are state requirements for low-income housing, or at least affordable housing, but I was wondering if there was any additional research into that, any additional efforts to make sure that we are helping to build a more just and equitable society, not only inside Massachusetts, but as well as raising children with values of housing justice and equity within the town itself.
Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. So the town is committed to maintaining, at the very least, the 40B requirement by the state. In addition, we are in conjunction with other towns by way of the Regional Housing Services Office, and the assessments that are made are continual with the very things that you have in mind.
Thank you. Article 34, Community Preservation Fund, Regional Housing Services Office, membership fee. Article 35, Community Preservation Fund, reversion of funds. Article 36, Community Preservation Fund, general budget and appropriations. I will now entertain a motion to approve the consent calendar articles as printed in the warrant. Is there a second? The vote required is majority. All in favor, please raise your card. Anyone opposed, please raise your card. That passes by unanimously. Article 11, FY22 Stabilization Fund. I'm sorry, that's on the consent calendar. Article 13 is withdrawn. Article 14, funding litigation costs Eversource. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move in the words of the article with the sum of $150,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? Both the Finance Committee and the Select Board support this. Does anybody wish to be heard on article? I'm sorry. Presentation by Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Henry Hayes, Town Manager. So as of 29 April 2021, the town has spent over $1,315,733.15 in litigation costs relative to Eversource. There are some current open items of appeals and some environmental concerns. However, our request is for $150,000 from free cash to continue to fund the costs of litigation with Eversource. This appropriation with the funds we already have are expected to fund any necessary appeals once we receive the decisions.
Thank you. As I mentioned, the Finance Committee and the Select Board both support this. Anybody wishes to be heard, please let me know. Mr. Surrett?
Yeah, Hank Surrett, Longfellow Road. While I respect the concerns of the neighbors about this impending power line development and believe that they should be heard and understood, I oppose this motion. On September 22nd of 2020, our Supreme Judicial Court issued an opinion dismissing and rejecting the town's arguments. There is no appeal from the decision of the Supreme Judicial Court. That case is over. To the extent they wish to challenge the Energy Facility Sightings Council's orders, I have never in my 43 years as a lawyer seen that a council decision overruled or set aside. I see this as money down a rat hole. In my law practice, when I went to a client and said I want a budget to do something, the client said to me appropriately, what are you asking me to pay for, and what are the reasonable likelihoods of success in the effort? I have not heard a candid assessment of what council thinks can be achieved that would change the outcome. I don't think there is anything that can be done that will change the outcome, because that ship has sailed when the Supreme Judicial Court entered its opinion. Anybody who wants to read the Supreme Judicial Court's opinion, I have a copy in my hand. Thank you.
And next person approach the mic, please.
My name is Tom Holliker, 623 Concord Road. Every year I rise at this time to appeal to the voters to reject this motion. I think it's throwing good money after bad. I think it's misconstrued effort, and I think that we just ought to get out of this business of trying to second guess a major power company.
Kevin Matthews, Haynes Road. I agree with the two preceding speakers. I feel also in Tom's words, this is throwing good money after bad. And there's plenty of other places where $150,000 could do something significant. And I didn't know about Henry's take on whether or not you can actually prevail in an appeal against a Supreme Judicial Court ruling. I would suggest that the town really think about that, whether this is even a viable strategy. And again, this is going to become a rail trail. Am I correct? There'll be electric lines underneath a rail trail, and I think that there's a consensus in the town that more rail trail is good. And so I quite don't see the logic to this. I'm fully against the overhead power lines, but at this point, I think the train's off the station, friends, and I think we're throwing good money after bad.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I support this article. Here's why. First of all, the SJC case that Mr. Surrett referred to was the land court case, and that clearly is over. However, the SJC has not yet ruled on the town and Protect Sudbury's opposition to the overall project. We're still awaiting a decision on that. The other thing that's going on is there's an action that Protect Sudbury brought against the Surface Transportation Board, with the Surface Transportation Board, to rule that the MBTA did not have the right to grant this use of the land because it's not an abandoned rail line. So that's still pending, and there may be costs related to dealing with that. However, it may be true that Eversource gets its way in the final, verdict of this, and they proceed to build the power line. However, they right now are proceeding at breakneck speed to try to get all of the necessary permits in place. This is with Conservation Commission, Historic Districts Commission, Historical Commission, the Earth Removal Board, and various other towns and commissions, as well as state and federal agencies. It's very important that we stay in the game until this has seen through to its ultimate conclusion, for the simple reason that if we don't have our eye on the ball with this permitting, then Eversource sort of has its way with the town in how they proceed with this project, whether or not they do testing for potential contaminants in the soil that they remove. The tons and tons and tons of soil that they move around the town and the impact on that, how they proceed with the construction. So a lot of these, the remaining funds have to deal with those issues of the permitting process and how the town responds. In some cases, it may mean that we have to employ the use of consultants again, which is not free, in order to counter the processes that Eversource proposes to put in place to deal with this project. And some of them can have significant impact on the town. With regard to the rail trail, yeah, we get a rail trail, but I personally am not going to want to be riding my bike very much distance over a high voltage transmission line. And I think anybody who does might want to look at the studies on that. You may agree with them, you may not, but I'm not going to put my safety at risk by riding over such a trail. So I think, you know, the game isn't over yet, and we need to stay in it to have any say in how this project is built through the town. Thank you.
Chris Stenzel, 109 Austin Road. Make no mistake about it, the Eversource project on the right-of-way is a major utility construction project predicated on a 2008 energy demand forecast. To be clear, the energy use actuals since 2008 have fallen significantly short of the forecast. If this project is allowed to proceed, our town would be facing the removal of acres of trees, the blasting through bedrock, the tons of contaminated earth to be removed and then moved again. This major utility construction would not have only a major environmental impact, but would put our drinking water supply at risk and would bulldoze through coveted historical elements belonging to Native American tribes and even Civil War era elements. If you personally have not had the time to attend the EFSB hearing or any of the permitting hearings, I am asking you to trust your fellow Sudbury residents who are engineers, utility, and environmental experts who have volunteered thousands of hours over the past several years who adamantly oppose the Eversource project. The case is currently at its final stages. We have the need to see it to the end, and I implore you to vote yes to this article, Article 14, and to continue to fund our legal fight. I would like to remind you that if we use this money, then we stand prepared. If we don't allocate the money, then we're not prepared. If we don't happen to use or need to use the money, then the money goes back to funds to be used for something else. There's really no downside to allocating this money. Again, I ask you to trust your Sudbury neighbors who invested their time and expertise to understand the vast implications of this project and vote yes to Article 14.
Hi, my name is Bill Chanella, 37 Jarman Road. I am a member of the Select Board, but speaking as a citizen who's very well up to speed on this. I'm not a direct abutter, no financial interest. Anyways, I echo some of the speakers who just preceded me and, you know, what got me up off my chair with the incorrect information about the Supreme Judicial Court, you know, one and only one case being over. That was, as Jim said, the Land Court approach was... that's over, but there are two other with appeals that have not been decided, and so the town needs to defend its position in those. I would just raise one other point, which is the elephant in the field, I guess. You know, in terms of the rail trail, the Department of Conservation and Recreation has an easement for this land. They had it before Eversource came along. They'll have it after Eversource leaves if the site, transmission line is not built there. DCR, I spoke to them at what they call the Golden Spike, Mass Central Rail Trail Conference that I attended a couple of years, and asked them directly if the Eversource project doesn't go through, will they build the rail trail? And the answer was yes. So, yeah, I respectfully ask folks, you know, in terms of allocating money, appropriating it, to not appropriate it would be to throw in the towel for the very effective litigation we've had so far. When I say effective, the project has changed numerous times as a result of Sudbury's opposition. And if the money is not needed when these things wrap up, then just like money that was appropriated 17 years ago for rail trails that stayed in the coffers, it can be reverted to the general fund. So, you know, I think this is no risk to the town to appropriate these funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Nick Pernice, 255 Peckham Road. I'm also in favor of this article. I have been following this project for 5 years. I've had to learn a lot about contamination, toxic waste, PFAS, I've learned a lot about the process that goes on in our government. I've seen that a large utility company does not need to play by the same rules as everyone else. If you don't follow them, if you don't push them, you don't get any answers. They are not going to give you anything that they are supposed to give you, information-wise. It's basically you have to find it if you want to call us on it. We know that historically trained corridors are going to have contamination, arsenic, heavy metals, stuff from the creosote. This is a known fact. And if you look at any of the documents that Eversource has drawn up in the past with towns, they're going to admit railroad corridors contain these chemicals. And this corridor is 100 years old. So I let you be the judge of that. They're going to remove thousands of cubic yards of soil and transport it through our town, along our roads, in front of our gardens, in front of our schools. They're going to be creating dust. I don't know if any of you have ever seen a construction site, but I guarantee you there is going to be dust. It's one thing to sort of look at this and say, well, you know, we'll just, like Eversource says usually at any of the commission meetings, we'll figure it out when we get there. Prevention is incredibly important when you're trying to deal with the health of your town or the health of your body. I think about this pandemic. What if we had stopped it last March? What if we had given up a couple $1 billion to sort of shut things down? Well, now we've spent, what, $2 trillion, $3 trillion? We've created a lot of pain, and we've lost 500,000 of our citizens. So if Eversource says, well, we'll just figure it out when we get there, if they get out to the western part of this where we meet with Hudson and they all of a sudden start digging up areas where there's PFAS contamination and it starts getting into one of our wellheads, what's going to happen then? Are you looking forward to drinking bottled water or washing your clothes with it? I'm not. The risk in this project inherently outweighs the benefit. And there is no benefit to our town from this project. None. It is going to be a blight on our town. It is endangering an entire historic district in our town. We are stewards of the historic aspects of our town. I grew up in this town, and one of the things that I learned as a child or as a kid growing up, as I was taken with the history of this town, it made me a better person. It made me want to be interested in our government. It made me want to become a part of this town. This town, I'd go down to April 19, and I'd see all the guys get together and shoot off muskets and walk off to Concord, and it was just amazing to me. Just amazing in terms of my imagination. And so much of this town, I grew up on Goodman Hill. I used to go looking for arrowheads as a kid. I mean, this is what makes this town special. This is our culture. It's our character. And we're letting this company come in and turn it into an industrial site. And I feel that it does not belong here. It is not appropriate. And a little bit of prevention now may save us a lot of money and a lot of pain later on. And so, therefore, I ask that the select board and the town manager help support our historic commission, which is going through their part of the process right now with whatever resources they need, because that is not a done deal. This is not a done deal. So I vote for this article, and I would continue to support the people who have given up so much of their time and so much of their weekends and their expertise in trying to keep this project from coming into this town. It is a disaster for us. Thank you.
We have one more speaker, and then I'm happy to call the question.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Ray Phillips. I live at 40 Whispering Pine Road in Sudbury. I'm also the president of Protect Sudbury. We've been at this now for over 5 years. And by we, I mean not just the town, all of your fellow citizens. The money to fund the litigation that has been necessary to protect all of the assets that you've heard mentioned has come both through the town and from your fellow citizens to have already affected change on the outcome of this project. We're essentially in the ninth inning of this project, and the score is tied. I am not in favor of walking off the playing field and letting the other side win. We've invested too much of our time and money, and too much is at stake to just simply walk away now and hope for the best. Your money has been well spent up until this time. We have imposed significant orders of conditions through the permitting process on Eversource. We were fortunate to have the funds to do this, unlike some of our neighboring communities. And if you compare the order of conditions between these two communities, they are radically different. But the real question is, what happens if the project actually does occur, which I don't believe it will? Who is going to enforce or make sure that all of these orders of conditions have been met? And if there are instances in which this project proponent violates the agreement, we need to be prepared to take them into a legal venue to defend what we already have established as a victory. So I urge all of you to continue to support this effort. We're in the ninth inning. It could go into extra innings, and we want to be ready. I support this. I support Article 14. Thank you.
Sure, you can ask a question.
Through you to town council, can we have a candid assessment?
Can you please state your name and address?
It's Hank Surrett, Longfellow Road. Can we have a candid assessment from town council about the likelihood of success in obtaining any significant change as a result of this expenditure?
Town council? No.
There we go. Thank you, Madam Moderator. Jonathan Silverstein, Town Council. The short answer is no. I'm not in a public venue going to give a candid assessment. We're talking about attorney-client communications, and as was previously mentioned, when a client asks a lawyer for a candid assessment of litigation, that is a confidential attorney-client communication that would simply be inappropriate to give in a venue like this. I will say that both town council and special counsel who's been hired to assist with this litigation have given many such assessments to the select board, as is appropriate, but with apologies, I simply do not think it would be appropriate to do in this venue.
Ma'am, do you have a question or a comment that has not already been articulated today? Okay, last comment, and then we'll have the vote.
Thank you, and I beg the audience's indulgence. Rebecca Cutting, 381 Maynard Road, resident of North Sudbury, former resident of Goodman's Hill. I simply wanted to make the audience aware of the behaviors of Eversource. We have, we're not strangers to this. Some of you may recall that Eversource went down to Pelham Island Road, Stock Farm Road area, where their overhead line comes through to the Sudbury substation from the south and clear cut people's lots without a moment's notice. And the selectmen became involved as citizens were concerned about property rights and asked Eversource to talk to them at the time. It was a difficult conversation because Eversource didn't really want to come to the table. Eversource, ladies and gentlemen, is not a straight shooter. We've seen their behavior before, and we've seen it. I personally have been through all the hearings from the Massachusetts Environmental Policy Act, NEPA filings that are comprehensive for all the state permits, and also the local permits, from conservation to stormwater planning. And I will say that those permits, thanks to the input of residents of Sudbury, are very well written. However, we still have one more board. The Earth Removal Board is finishing its decision presently. I expect that it will be very similar and tightly written, thankfully. And for us, what we need to do is keep an eye on Eversource should they proceed with their project. I hope they will wait until all the appeals are closed, the Surface Transportation Board appeal at the federal level, and we have another little-known federal-level issue with them through our historical commission, who discovered that Eversource, despite its protestations to the contrary, had not consulted with the Native American tribes who were consulting parties to the railroad right-of-way, which the state historic preservation officer declared could be on the National Register of Historic Places because of its irreplaceable Civil War bridges, two of them, Hop Brook, both of them, one behind Mill Village, a very historic location for the King Philip War, and also there were prehistoric resources discovered. It is not clear to our own historical commission, because Eversource has not provided the information, what exactly is going to be done to protect the prehistoric and historic resources down there. Further, Eversource and the Army Corps of Engineers, right over here at Virginia Road in Concord, despite numerous attempts for residents of Sudbury, including Mr. Phillips, who just spoke, and myself, and the Historic Commission, to obtain information on their filing, they developed a memorandum of understanding, which recently was described by the Federal Review Board as on very shaky legal ground. So we have locally reviewed, our historical commission is an important player and a consulting party, along with the Native Americans, to this process. And we're not done. This MOU should not be finalized. And if it had not been for the sharp-eyed work of the members of the historical commission, we would not have known this. Thank you.
Mr. Schneller, you already spoke. Do you have something very brief to say?
Yes, I do have a question for Town Manager Hayes. And the question is, and it relates to, I think, a misstatement that the previous person said. Has the order of conditions that the Sudbury Select Board voted on and wrote, has that been accepted by Eversource? And have they said and gave indications that they we'll fight it to throw out some of the conditions.
Mr. Hayes?
Town Manager Henry Hayes. So the Eversource has the conditions that the Select Board signed, and I, to date, have no information that of their position or intended actions.
The quantum of vote for Article 14 is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes by more than majority. Article 15 is withdrawn. Article 16, construction of housing living addition, fire station number 2. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move that the town appropriate the sum of $4,300,000 to be expended under the direction of the town manager for the purpose of constructing a new housing living office area adjacent to and connected to the existing fire station number 2 building located at 550 Boston Post Road, with the permanent building committee tasked with oversight of professional engineering, architectural, and project management services, preparation of plans, specifications, bid documents, supervision of work, and including the purchase of additional equipment, technology, furniture, landscaping, and acquisition by gift, purchase, eminent domain, or otherwise such temporary and or permanent access, utility, and or other easements as may be necessary, and all incidental and related expenses, and that may that to meet this appropriation, $500,000 be appropriated from free cash, $500,000 to be transferred from the sale of the real estate fund, and the town treasurer, with the approval of the selectmen board, be authorized to borrow $3,300,000 under and pursuant to General Law Chapter 40, Section 7 or 8, and any other enabling authority, and to issue bonds or notes of the town, therefore, and further, that any premium received from upon the sale of any bonds or notes approved by this vote, unless any such premium applied to the payment of the cost of issuance of such bonds or notes, may be applied to the payment of costs approved by this vote in accordance with General Law Chapter 40, Section 20, 44, General Law Chapter 44, Section 20, thereby reducing the amount authorized to be borrowed to pay such costs by a like amount.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Fire Chief John Whalen.
Good afternoon. I would like to start by saying the members of the Sudbury Fire Department, Sudbury Police Department, Highway Department, Board of Health, Facilities, Recreation, every single organization in this town appreciates the amount of support that we have gotten in the last 14 months. This has been a very, very difficult time for all of us. And the only reason we got through this as a group is because of the support of all the citizens in Sudbury. I'm here to present Article 16. The reason for our discussion today is to add a ALS ambulance in South Sudbury. In order for us to be able to do that, we need to expand the housing and living space that is in that current station. As you can see by the slide behind me, we have had a significant increase in call volume in South Sudbury. This is generated by lots of new projects that we've had built, 55 and older. We've had a memory care facility built and a larger apartment complex. The goal of this whole entire program is to ensure is to ensure that we can provide advanced life support to everybody in the southern section of Sudbury in a more timely fashion. There are currently other fire stations being built in the region, and these are some of the costs that are associated with them. As you can see, the price tags on these projects are expensive. With the guidance of the Board of Select Board, we have gone and tried to come up with a hybrid project that would allow us to expand capability down on Route 20 and still keep it within the cost. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. One of the main issues that we have in that current facility is size. That building will only hold two fire personnel, and we really, really need the ability to house four. There are no gender-neutral facilities in that building. It's all shared space, and the personnel that work down there right now are working in about 312 square feet of space. Next slide, please. This is just an example of what the current living conditions are. If you're a fan of the 1960s, come on down. It looks exactly the same as it did back then. Next slide, please. It's our bathroom, and the facility in that particular avenue is very small, old, and was built in the 1960s. And that's the sleeping quarters for the firefighter, paramedics, and the fire officers. Next slide, please. The apparatus bay in that particular station is very cramped. With this project, we will actually gain space to house that ambulance. We will be able to take the storage area that's in the rear, remove that, and reallocate that space to someplace that's currently else in the building, and that'll allow us to keep another piece of apparatus in that facility. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. What you're seeing here is a schematic of what we intend to do with this particular project. This truly is building a housing facility, office facility, for the people that are assigned in that station. Next slide, please. This is the room schedule. I often get asked how big the rooms are going to be, and this will give you an idea. There's just about 2,500 working square feet inside this project that we're going to ask for. Next slide, please. This is an artist's rendering of what the project would look like. Next slide, please. This would be the Route 20 straight-on view. Next slide, please. Route 20 eastbound. Next slide, please. So what is the cost? Costs are always the hardest part. This current project would be $4,300,000. This is from our architect. They've done a probable cost of what this project is going to cost. Next slide, please. How do we choose to pay for it? As in the article, there is $500,000 coming from the police station sold property, $500 in free cash, and $3.3 million in debit levy for a total project of $4,300,000. Next slide, please. The current cost of this to the average household is zero, because this project will come under the town's current levy limit. Next slide, please. And I would love to entertain any questions from anybody about the project.
Thank you. The Finance Committee, the Select Board, and the CIAC all support Article 16. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 16?
Ralph Tyler. Chief Whalen, I respect you, but I'm really confused. So this is a project to add two more people, housing for two more people. And an average, sort of average house in Sudbury is about 2,500 square feet, and they go for $745,000. I see in the warrant. So why don't we just go and buy a house and you know, have people sleep there and save a whole bunch of money? I mean, at one point, we had a police station that was empty, and we decided to sell it for $500,000, perfectly located for an ambulance down there. We could have reused that space. So now we're facing a $4.3 million to hire two people. It just doesn't make sense to me. And I'm wondering if you've considered prefabricated housing units as, somebody build them off-site, bring it in, put it down, connect it to the septic system. There's got to be some other creative solution than $4.3 million. I noticed it's going to be a brick structure. That's about the most expensive kind of structure you can build because brick by brick, the laborers get a huge amount of money. So in due respect, I understand the desire to have another ambulance down in South Sudbury, but $4.3 million to house an additional two people doesn't make sense. And as far as the gender-neutral facilities, I just don't understand. You know, if they're on duty, I don't understand the sleeping situation. They're supposed to be in a position they can jump into the fire engine and go put out a fire right away. So we're not talking about wanting fancy bedrooms or anything. And nowadays you can go into a Target store and you find gender-neutral bathroom with the family restroom. Men go there, women go there, families go there, children go there. So dorms and colleges, all co-ed now in a lot of places. So I just don't see all the, parent needs, a conference room. There's going to be four people on duty, down there. We don't need a conference room. We don't need public spaces. We need space for two more firefighters, and there's got to be a cheaper way to do it.
Chief Whalen, would you like to address the other alternative question and the bathroom question?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. This whole entire plan, as you look at it, is conceptual. We need to have funding to be able to go and have the permanent building committee engage an architect, engage an owner's project manager, and get this built. This is truly a conceptual plan. Choice of materials has not been selected. We haven't even got to that point. This is just something that we work with the architects to try and blend it in and make it look like the current station that's down on Route 20. I don't think that there's a lot of people that truly understand what we do in the fire service. When we call it a firehouse, it really should be a fire home. Our employees live in these buildings 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. And in order to have good, high-quality public safety people, we need to have facilities that shows that we are a high-quality team. And currently, these two outstations don't meet that requirement.
Thank you. Sir?
Fred Pryor, 221 Knobscot Road. Chief, I'm very much in favor of your plan. However, I have a question, and the question comes back to, I believe they brought about 3 years ago the same kind of plan to do something with the South Station, South Sudbury Fire Station, which I walk by on a regular basis, and it is small. But my question is, at that time, I believe the Avalon developers were putting in a good-sized chunk of money to expand that fire station. Has anybody gone to them and asked for the same amount of money?
Chief Whalen?
When the National Development Project was done, I sat in the original meetings with the project developer, and the first thing we asked for was a fire station. And that did not get done through the negotiations. Although National Development did give the town money for fire station design, National Development also provided us a sewer and stormwater hookup for this particular project. Money that we would have to use normally for stormwater retention and sewer is not going to be part of this project because of the work that we did with National Development.
Thank you. Mr. Travers?
Yes, I'm speaking for the CIAC, which supported this project 7-0,
supporting the intent of the project and the need for this project. The CIAC did have a concern with the cost estimate and did a comparative study with other fire stations on a cost per square foot basis. This cost estimate was higher than the actual construction on other fire stations. But as a postscript to that, in today's bidding environment, we don't know where costs are because of limited supply and the whole supply chain. So from a cost point of view, knowing Chief Whalen for many years now, I know that they're not going to spend money frivolously. So the CIAC continues to support this project, and we're hoping that Chief Whalen and his crew will continue to keep the cost down. Thank you.
I'm Pat Lewis, and I live at 32 Old Framingham Road. And, you know, this is all about the cost and where the firemen stay. But an advanced life support ambulance is really critical and crucial to South Sudbury. I added up the number of increased residences recently, and there's 435 new living situations in South Sudbury over, I don't know, the last 6 or 7 years. The majority of those places have senior citizens. Now, an advanced life support ambulance probably has to come from Hudson Road. Those minutes getting from Hudson Road to any place in South Sudbury can be crucial in a life and death issue. So, you know, the piece that really shouldn't be lost in this is that we need more fire service, including advanced life support, and another engine in South Sudbury. And it seems to me that with the $4.3 million, that's a lot less than people, the numbers that Chief put up at the beginning, which were $10 million plus. So I'm totally in support of this article. Thank you.
You can approach.
K-Bell, 348 Old Lancaster Road. My father was a firefighter in the city, and so I look at this project from the perspective. I used to visit when I was a little kid, and I fully appreciate that the firefighters and the EMTs live there. It's their living space, and I really wouldn't want to see our firefighters in a sort of an attached trailer. You know, they really deserve the respect of something that is truly a home-like situation while they're there. They'll be better prepared to take care of us. So I support this, and I just wanted to ask Chief Whalen, does this conceptual design really take care of all of the needs that you see for the staff there and for the foreseeable future? Chief Whalen?
Thank you, Madam Moderator. For the foreseeable future, yes, in South Sudbury, I would say. Just as a point, to give you an idea on improved response times, down at the Whalen line and down at the Marlboro line, we're looking at about a minute and 46 seconds faster for response for an ALS ambulance when it's located exactly where it is on Route 20.
Quantum of vote required for passage of Article 16 is 2/3. All in favor, please raise your card. Anyone opposed? That passes by more than 2/3. We're moving ahead to Article 21, Street Acceptance, Anthony Drive. I do want to make a note that in your warrant it says that the required vote is 2/3, but because this road is shown on the subdivision plan, the vote is actually a majority vote. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move to accept as a public way the following way: Anthony Drive from North Road Route 117 to a dead end, a distance of 613 feet plus or minus, adopted as laid out by the Select Board in accordance with a description and plan entitled Street Acceptance Plan, Anthony Drive, Sudbury, Massachusetts, prepared for Distinctive Acton Homes, Inc. by Foresight Engineering, dated December 5th, 2019, on file in the Town Clerk's office, and to authorize the Select Board to acquire or purchase by gift or by eminent domain an easement or the fee over in, or in the way shown on said plan and any associated drainage, utility, or other easements for all purposes for which public ways are used in the town of Sudbury.
Thank you. Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Town Manager Hayes.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Article 21, Henry Hayes, Town Manager. Article 21, Street Acceptance, Anthony Drive. Anthony Drive, next slide, please, is from the distance is 613 feet plus or minus from North Road or Route 117 to a dead end. Recommendations of the Department of Public Works as to the roads which meet legal requirements for acceptance has been satisfied. Acceptance will enable routine maintenance, storm water management, and snow plowing, amongst other things. Once accepted, it will be added to the town's inventory and available for appropriate funding.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Thank you. Does the Select Board have a report?
The Select Board supports this article.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 21? So as I mentioned, the quantum of vote for required for passage is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. Anyone opposed, please raise your card. That passes unanimously. Article 23, Sudbury Public Schools COVID-19 Student Academic Program. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $309,540 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by SPS Superintendent Brad Crozier.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Next slide. The Sudbury Public Schools is requesting $309,540 to create a five-week summer program for elementary students to mitigate learning impacts from COVID. The program will target elementary students, K-5, and focus on numeracy and literacy skills. The instructions will be provided by trained educators aligned with Sudbury's curriculum using a 1-to-10 ratio of teachers to students. The program is designed to accommodate approximately 40 students per grade for each of the academic models for up to 400 students. Administrative and nursing staff will be on site to support the program. Eligibility for the program was determined by spring benchmarking data and educator recommendations. To date, 363 students have been invited to the program. Students will be referred to one of the two programs, either for numeracy or literacy, along with a social module that will happen to create a full-day program for the students that are invited to the program. We'll also have that social program will also be in partnership with Parks and Recreation, and a fee will be associated with that piece of the program. Transportation and lunch for qualifying students is also available. Thank you.
Thank you. The Finance Committee and the Select Board both support Article 23. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 23? The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor of Article 23, please raise your cards. All opposed, please raise your cards. That passes by more than majority. Article 24, Sudbury Public Schools, Peter Noyes Elementary School, Fire Alarm Replacement, Fire Alarm System Replacement. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $220,000 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Facilities Director, please.
Can I have the second slide, please? The noise fire alarm replacement seeks $220,000 to replace the existing Peter Noyes Elementary School fire alarm system. Next. This means a new master control panel, detectors, all associated devices, and all wiring. This project also includes a complete demolition and removal of all components of the existing fire alarm system. Next. The existing outdated system is subject to an increasing number of malfunctions and has become increasingly problematic to maintain in working order. The outdated technology makes parts for regular maintenance and repair increasingly difficult and expensive to obtain. Next. Also, continuing to attempt repairs depletes school departmental operational budgets, and the risk of continuing to operate the existing system by the eventual lack of replacement parts and potential system failure. Next. The existing system is a proprietary one. This limits replacement part sourcing. The new fire alarm system will be a non-proprietary one, with a notifier, addressable master control panel, and annunciator. Next, please. The new addressable system will transmit alarm information via a radio box within the building directly to the fire department. This information will contain the precise location and nature of any alarm. With this pre-arrival information, responding crews will be directed to the exact area and source of the alarm. And also, to assist with exiting, this new system will also broadcast standard voice alarm information within the building to notify occupants of the nature and source of the alarm. Next, please. This replacement work would take place in the summer of 2021. The summer schedule will help expedite the project in time for completion prior to the new school year. Next, please. And most importantly, during construction period, the existing system remain in place and fully functioning and operational as the new system is complete, operational, and commissioned. Thank you.
Thank you. The Finance Committee, the Select Board, and CIAC all support Article 24. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 24? The quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed? That passes unanimously. Article 25, Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School Stadium Field and Community Turf Field Replacement. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move in the words of the article with a sum of $337,500 to be transferred from free cash.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Ms. Wong.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Bella Wong, Superintendent Principal for Lincoln Sudbury. What a great opportunity and venue for you to really appreciate this request. Where you parked your cars is where the old Lincoln Sudbury was, and behind you is the Lincoln Sudbury that was erected in 2004. Town leaders at that time had the foresight to come up with a field plan. You are sitting on a baseball diamond. Turf 1 and Turf 2 is over there, which was one synthetic field. The other synthetic field put in place is the stadium field in front of you and behind me. School was built, next slide, please. The school was built in 2004. Turf 1 and Turf 2 was put in place in 2004, and some of you may not know that the building itself is a buildings A, B, and C. They were built in stages. And so it was a completely disrupted environment as they built the school in the old parking lot, in the old tennis courts, and erected these other fields. Turf 1 and Turf 2 that was put in place in 2004 was replaced in summer 2018, so I thank all of you for supporting that. The stadium field that was put in place in 2007 is the subject of the article. Management of the community stadium field is provided for in an intermunicipal agreement that was executed by the Board of Selectmen and the LS School Committee in 2004. In that agreement, Park and Rec largely schedules the field after LS events are completed and also collects the fees for that. In October 2018, in preparation for the replacement and discussion of replacement of the field, we determined with Park and Rec a 50-50 user ratio between the school department and Park and Rec. Subway town manager at that time was advised of the determination and plan, and then we proceeded to plan for the funding of it. LS School Committee, Lincoln Board of Selectmen, Subway Board of Selectmen approved $337,500 to be allocated from the LS Excess and Deficiency Fund, the E&D fund that was certified in FY19 toward 50% of the replacement costs. The E&D fund is comprised of appropriations from Lincoln and Sudbury. So that part has already been approved and is sitting in account ready to be used. The article here is for the 50% coming from the town of Sudbury that reflects the Park and Rec portion of use and collection of fees. Next slide, please. In preparation for the number presented to you, we put out a bid October 2020 and received a bid price between $495,000 and $545,000, but keep in mind that was the fall of 2020, which is why the adjusted cost and contingency is significant, $96,820. And if you that have anything involved with construction renovation know that costs have increased, so it allows for that adjustment. The total project cost is still estimated to be $675,000, and the request for use is up to amounts. So if we use anything less than that, then that's all that will be utilized. Next slide, please. This is just the outline of the quote from Field Turf. They have been contacted. And then next slide, please. It's the scope of the turf replacement. We will reuse the base that's already there. All right, so we're not rebuilding the base. We'll be digging out what is there and then putting fresh infill in and then fixing the field. This turf field will be at a higher degree of cushion than the one that's over there. And that's because the sports that are played on these are high-impact sports, football and rugby in particular. Next slide, please. It's just the outline of the engineering costs. Especially because we're reusing the base, we have to make sure we have an independent engineer to make sure that we do everything appropriately. And then the next slide is the scope of engineering services. Right? Again, emphasizing that we'll be reusing the base. And then I think the last slide is the turf base contingency. Again, the explanation for the contingency. I am sensitive to questions that were asked for previous articles about things that are environmentally minded and protective. So the fill is from scrap tire that's been pulverized to create the crumb, and the existing crumb that's in our field will be taken out and recycled. It may be recycled for other fields. It may be recycled for some of the hard benches that you see in parks around you. Thank you.
Thank you. The Finance Committee, the Select Board, and the CIAC all support Article 25. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 25? Mr. Travers?
Tom Travers, 32 Framingham Road, Vice Chair of the CIAC. Although the CIAC approved this six people for, one abstention, we had two concerns. One was that Park and Rec was not adequately putting away money to replace all these turf fields, and that we would request that they have a long-term plan to do that on a timely basis. Some of our members did question why Lincoln was not paying their percentage of the amount that's being asked today, and we're concerned about that. So we did approve it 6-0, 6-4, 1 abstention. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wong, would you like to address the issue of Lincoln's payment?
I understand that a couple of members felt differently, but as I said, we
asking to determination of 50-50 use. The difference between the stadium field and the turf field is that the turf field, 1 and 2, LS schedules that and collects the fees, and then we're able to put that aside for maintenance. The stadium field, we don't collect the fees until Park and Rec is finished scheduling the field, and only after then can we schedule the field, and we have not been able to do that for the last, since 2013. And so given that, that's really where the difference was between Turf 1, Turf 2, and the stadium field. We do feel that that Lincoln endorsed the use of the E&D funds for the other 50% that's used by LS students for LS programs, and to understand that any use of the E&D fund has to be approved by the Board of Selectmen of both towns. So both towns always have input on, I'm sorry, looking at the E&D.
Thank you. Sir?
Stephen Wyman, 114 Old Lancaster Road. So it's great to hear you mention that there's going to be recycled materials being used, but I'm also wondering if there was any research put into the long-term environmental impact, both of the materials that are being used and if they are recycled, as opposed to, like, pollution and runoff potentially caused by the component. Like, I was wondering if there is an assessment on the materials being used, as well as environmentally conscious methods for construction to make sure that both the material construction, short-term and long-term environmental impacts of the field construction are all considered.
Yes, thank you. So turf fields, so obviously we replaced turf 1 and turf 2 after it went in 2004, and then this one we're asking for that went in 2007. The fields generally last about 10 years, so here we are in 2021, so there were a whole cycle of fields that have gone through replacement before ours have gone through replacement, and a lot of studies were done at that time, testing for leaching, those kinds of things. I know that the fact that the crumb is created from scrap tire has been seen as a positive for reuse of that. There is actually limited reuse of that material, so this is a great reuse. There's something about the quality of this rubber material that actually is optimal for the shock absorbency in a very efficient, inexpensive, and an efficient use. So I think the long-term analysis of the effectiveness of using crumb is good in terms of safety, and the research around leaching into fields hasn't shown that that's been an issue. There can be some off-gassing with any synthetic material, but it's a temporary effect. Like, you wouldn't have people on the field right away. You would let that off-gas happen. That would protect safety of individuals that were going to use the field. But I think all in all, the fact that it's reusing material that otherwise wouldn't have that great a use has been considered a good thing. And there hasn't been research about leaching in fields or actually impact on individuals. There's been so many fields out there that they've researched that pretty well.
Thank you. Anybody else on Article 25? Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Kelly Piotrowski from Goodman's Hill Road. I believe there has been research on that. I mean, I remember clearly that same type of material, the recycled tires, was banned in many cities, including New York City, from playground use. And I'm just rather surprised that an environmentally conscious town like Sudbury is using artificial turf. Can you explain why you would not use sod, regular grass? I mean, I assume it has something to do with the maintenance, but can you just speak to that, please?
Could you just state your name and address again, town clerk?
Sure, Kelly Piotrowski, Goodman's Hill Road.
Thank you. Ms. Wong?
In the research that I've reviewed, I have not seen that as being an issue of concern for the use of the crumb for these fields. But they also, the students aren't directly exposed to the crumb. It's largely the infill, and then there's a layer of cushioning, and then there's another layer of the turf field that's on top of it. So students aren't having direct contact with it.
am not aware of any other communities that are not reusing this material for the fields that have been replaced. We did replace the Turf 1, Turf 2 in 2018. But I appreciate the question that it is something that people wonder about. But in the research I've done, I haven't seen it. A reason why we wouldn't use it. The material is much more shock absorbent than natural material. And again, this field will be used for high impact sports. A major concern has been the increased occurrence of concussions, and especially the detriment for second concussion or more. And so I think it's really important that we have best safe materials in the field for the use. And I should say that in the spring season, 500 students are participating in LS athletics. Last year, 1,000 students participated in LS athletics. So the fields that you have put in place and the athletic facilities in the building are being fully utilized.
Thank you. If there's nobody else, the quantum of vote required for passage is majority. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed, please raise your cards. That passes by more than majority. Article 26, Amendment Zoning Bylaw, Article 9, Amend Text of Section 2110, Establishment. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by the Planning Board.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Adam Duchesneau, Director of Planning and Community Development, and this is the Planning Board report for Article 26. This proposed amendment to Section 2110 is an administrative one. It simply updates the listing of zoning overlay districts in the section to be consistent with the overlay districts in the current zoning bylaw. Overlay districts which are no longer listed in the zoning bylaw have been removed, and overlay districts which have been created over the years, such as the Malone Smart Growth Overlay District, have been added to the list, and the order of the listing of the overlay districts has been reordered to be consistent with the order in which they appear in the zoning bylaw. The Planning Board recommends.
Thank you. Does the Finance Committee have a report?
Finance Committee has no report on this article.
Okay. The Select Board has supports this. I did receive an amendment to this article by Mr. Tyler, if he wants to come to the microphone now and make that amendment.
Ralph Tyler, 1 Deacon Lane, Sudbury. I move to amend this article by deleting the underlined words North Road Residential Overlay District, reference section 4700A, comma, Malone Smart Growth Overlay District, parentheses, reference section 4300B.
Thank you. Do you wish to make your presentation on this?
Well, he has it. Mark, can you up the presentation? You couldn't get it?
Thank you.
I thought I'd emailed it, but it didn't come in. The purpose of this amendment is to preserve the current legal status of Sudbury zoning bylaw by not enabling, and if you look at the text of Article 26, it's the establishment clause in the bylaw. So this is not a mere reordering of things. This is actually the section that establishes the various zones in the zoning bylaw. And these sections are the site of this massive, unwanted Cold Brook Crossing development that the town was forced to accommodate the Station Road developers when they tried to take the town center for their project. Now that Sudbury has taken possession of the town center land and they fulfilled all their commitments to the developers, the town has no more obligation to enable the developers. In this zoning change here, adding sections 4700A and 47B to the zoning bylaw in the establishment clause removes a defect in, let's say, the zoning bylaw in terms of enabling this project. And this was pointed out to Adam and the planning board in a letter that I wrote to them during the permitting process. I said, you know, you look at the zoning and you see the establishment in here, and there's not even, these zones are not listed. So this is a sort of a major, major change to the zoning bylaw, and we're enabling the Cold Brook Crossing developers, the ones who came to Sudbury to do the Sudbury Station development, who, by the way, have sold out the development already to somebody else, long gone, I guess, or at least a part of it has been sold out. So I think the way that this is going to work, Sudbury doesn't have to do anything. But as the development goes forward, my experience with closing attorneys for buyers is that some of them are quite diligent, and they'll be looking at the zoning bylaw, and they'll be looking to see if it's properly done, properly indexed, and the zoning bylaw properly stated. And I would argue, I actually went to the town clerk about a year ago and I asked for a copy of the entire complete zoning map of Sudbury. And the thing I got was one page, and it only showed the principal districts. So it didn't even show the Water Resource Protection District, because that's another map. So there's provisions in the law that the zoning map, you have to be able to look at a zoning map and look at your property and see all of the zoning that is covered in there, and you can't do that in the bylaw. So when the diligent attorneys representing buyers come to look at this, and somebody is going to recognize that they're going to have to recommend to their clients that they not close because there's deficiencies in the zoning. And that's good for Sudbury because these developers are planning in Cold Brook Crossing to recycle all of the wastewater, the septic, the sewage, the flushing of your toilet. They're going to put it into that gravel pit up gradient of well number 5. And if well number 5 ever is used again, they say it's going to be clean, drinking water clean, but they're long gone. But we're in Sudbury, we'll be living with it for many, many years. And we, you know, we won't be just relying on the estimates of the engineers. We'll actually be drinking the water. And so I think it's a massive industrial scale development, and we should do nothing more to enable it. So I recommend that you vote yes on this amendment so that we don't further enable the developers in the pursuit of their massively large project, unwanted by most Sudbury residents, at least those in North Sudbury. Thank you.
Does Mr. Tyler's motion to amend have a second? It does. Does anybody? I'm sorry. Mr. Duquesne, do you have a position on the motion to amend?
Sure, Madam Moderator, I can provide some comments. I don't necessarily agree with Mr. Tyler's proposed amendment. There are currently, as I mentioned, zoning overlay districts that are not listed in this section of the zoning bylaw, such as the Malone Smart Growth Overlay District, as well as the George Pitts Historic District, George Pitts Tavern Historic District. The town's been permitting those zoning districts for a number of years, and if you'll, if everybody knows, the Meadowwalk development down where the Whole Foods is, that was permitted through the Malone Smart Growth, the mixed-use overlay district. But in any event, the Malone Smart Growth district, that's been fully permitted, so I respectfully disagree with Mr. Tyler's proposed amendment.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard on the motion to amend Article 26? A motion to amend requires a passage of two-thirds. All in favor of the motion to amend, please raise your cards. All opposed to the motion to amend, please raise your cards. The motion to amend does not pass by two-thirds. We'll now move back to the main Article 26. Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 26? The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 26 is two-thirds. All in favor of Article 26, please raise your cards. All opposed to Article 26? That passes by more than two-thirds. Article 27, amend zoning bylaw. Article 9, amend text of Section 2023-24 regarding trailers or other structures for storage or office purposes. Motion by Chair Drettler. No. No.
Move in the words of the article.
Thank you. Presentation by the Planning Board.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Adam DeShano, Director of Planning and Community Development. And this is the Planning Board report for Article 27. There's currently little direction in the zoning bylaw to instruct town staff as to how to regulate trailers, containers, and other transportable components for storage or office purposes. And inquiries on these types of objects have come up more frequently in the past few years. As such, this proposed amendment establishes definitions for these containers and trailers and provides clear direction to town staff as to how these items should be regulated. In this proposed amendment, the temporary use, 6 months or less, of trailers and containers for storage or office purposes would be allowed with review and approval of the building inspector. The use of trailers and containers for longer than 6 months would only be permitted by special permit from the Zoning Board of Appeals, if not already allowed, as an as-of-right use in the zoning district. In order to implement this language, the Planning Board is recommending Section 2324 of the Zoning Bylaw, which currently speaks to the regulation of trailers and other structures for storage or office purposes, be amended to include containers and other transportable components. Additionally, the proposed amendments to this section transfers the permitting authority of trailers and containers away from the Select Board and puts it in the hands of the building inspector for temporary locations of 6 months or less and the Zoning Board of Appeals when a special permit is needed for the long-term usage of these containers. The Zoning Board of Appeals is the entity more appropriately suited to deal with this type of permitting as they conduct it on a regular basis for other special permit matters as part of their duties. Additionally, shifting this permitting to the Zoning Board of Appeals would help to lighten the workload of the Select Board, which has seen significant increase in its items, which need their attention over the last few years. The Planning Board recommends.
Thank you. I'm going to take one step back. Is there a second for the motion? Thank you. The Select Board supports Article 27. Does the Finance Committee have a report? The microphone wasn't working.
The committee takes no decision.
Thank you. Does the Planning Board have a position?
The Planning Board recommends.
Does anybody wish to be heard on Article 27? Sir?
Not working.
Try it again.
John Reardon, 12 Pendleton Road. I'm also the chair of the Zoning Board of Appeals. The Zoning Board of Appeals unanimously supports this amendment.
Thank you. If there are no other questions or comments, the quantum of vote required for passage of Article 27 is 2/3. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed, please raise your cards. Article 27 passes unanimously. Article 28, amend zoning bylaw. Article 9, amend text of Section 2300, signs and advertising devices. Motion by Chair Drettler.
Move in the words of the article.
Is there a second? There is. Presentation by Planning Board.
Thank you, Madam Moderator. Adam DeShano, Director of Planning and Community Development. And this is the Planning Board report for Article 28 regarding Section 3200. This warrant article proposes several small changes to Section 3200 regarding the regulation of signs and advertising devices. The purpose of these proposed amendments is to clarify certain points, portions of this section to ensure there is a level playing field for certain regulations and to formalize in the zoning bylaw regulations which are currently being implemented in other ways, such as through the site plan review or special permitting processes. For example, many times the Zoning Board of Appeals or the Planning Board, as part of a permitting process, will require all lighting in a project to be dark sky compliant per the International Dark Sky Association. One of the proposed amendments to Section 3200 makes it very clear that any illumination of signage should meet this standard. This amendment will make this requirement clear to signage applicants from the beginning of their permitting process, and they can design their signage accordingly. Another proposed amendment allows for the building inspector, at their discretion, to permit temporary signs while applicants are going through a signage permitting process, but for no longer than 6 months. This proposed amendment provides assistance to signage applicants in particular businesses who are going through the appropriate permitting channels for their signage, but where the process is perhaps not aligning with the timeline of their opening or larger events throughout the year. The last proposed amendment, which should be highlighted, is the addition of the graphic, which displays how the square footage of signage should be measured. This graphic is currently being used to assist applicants and town staff in determining the size of proposed signage in the mixed-use overlay district where the Meadowalk development is located. By placing this graphic directly into the zoning bylaw, it makes clear to all parties as to how the square footage of signage will be calculated. These proposed amendments will make it clear to signage applicants and the requirements by which they need to adhere, while at the same time providing assistance to those applicants who are following the permitting rules and regulations. The Planning Board recommends.
Thank you. The Select Board supports Article 28. Does the Finance Committee have a report? Your mic wasn't on.
Position.
Thank you. Does the Planning Board have a report?
The Planning Board recommends.
Does the Zoning Board wish to report?
John Reardon, 12 Pendleton Road. The Zoning Board of Appeals did not take a formal vote on this amendment. It was in the jurisdiction of the Planning Board, but I will add that the Zoning Board of Appeals does get a number of special permit applications for signs, and due in part due to the ambiguity of some of our sign zoning rules. And so I'm sure that the board would welcome the improvement of this language. I speak only as an individual, but I know that my colleagues on the board would welcome the clarity of this amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody else wish to be heard on Article 28? The quantum of vote required for passage of Article 28 is 2/3. All in favor, please raise your cards. All opposed, please raise your cards. That passes unanimously. Once again, I would like to thank all the town staff who worked so hard to put all this together. Their hard work ensured that you, the voters, were fully informed on all articles and that town meeting itself was conducted in a safe, effective, and professional manner. They are all excellent, and we could not do this without them. Thank you also to the town clerk and town council who made sure that every step of the way that we met our legal obligations. It is extremely helpful to me to have such clear and competent advice over the course of the meeting, and I very much appreciate their guidance. Finally, thanks to you, our citizens and legislatures, for caring enough about your town to participate in this process, especially on this mixed weather day. Your ability to balance passion for these issues with a civility of tone was, as usual, exemplary and much appreciated by everyone on this stage. Thanks again to the Boy Scouts for helping with the mics. town clerk has also asked me to remind all recently elected and appointed officials, if you had not already been sworn in, to please meet with her at the conclusion of today's meeting. Finally, according to Article 4, Section 1 of the town bylaws, it is the responsibility of the moderator to appoint members to vacant seats on the Finance Committee before the end of the annual town meeting. This year, the term of three members are set to expire. All three members, Susan Berry, Jean Nahm, and Blair Capel, wish to continue to serve. Accordingly, I have reappointed each of them to a new three-year term. Thank you very much. This is one of the most time-intensive volunteer commitments one could make, and I appreciate all the hours that they have put in on our behalf. At this point, I would take a motion to dissolve this 2021 annual town meeting. Thank you. Is there a second? All in favor, please raise your cards. And that passes unanimously. Thank you. Thank you.